Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Today is a whooping and also beloved Monday, ladies and gentlemen. And you know how we do. It is Monday. We are feeling the vibes. We're just trying to make it through. I think that we're just trying to make it through. Let me see. Before we get started, I want you guys to go and grab your coffee, grab your tea, because the weather in Windhoek City is just giving. It's giving. Let's snuggle up things like tough.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Alrighty, good evening to you. Today we're talking about preferences. We're talking about preferences, but we're not just talking about any type of preferences. We're talking about relationship preferences. And the reason that I opted to talk about this is because I want us to start the year with, you know, clean vision, clean narrative, clean. It must be clean. The way that we are, we want things to go. It must be clean. It must be nice. It must be neat. It must be, you know, sharp. It must be, It must be nice things, you know. And with these nice things, we can start with, for example, right? Knowing exactly what we're doing. And part of knowing exactly what we're doing is knowing exactly what we're doing in terms of relationships. So now some of you guys have started your relationships in December. Okay, December. And okay, we're not judging you. We're just saying that it could have been a fling. It could have been a fling, but we are not judging you. And you know, okay, maybe we're judging you a little bit, but not as much as you think, okay? We're not judging you as much as you think, but maybe we are judging you a little bit because we also know that December relationships, they don't really work. December relationships, you know, that one, you are fascinated with each other. You are in the festive season. You are just feeling the vibes. Also, you're extra happy. You know, all the modules that you were doing on distance came through and you passed. And then also work is nice. And then everybody is like, you know, like everybody's kind of happy and everybody's kind of feeling great. And everybody is also just, you know, it's the end of the year and you're just happy and optimistic about the following year. So maybe you might not be making correct judgment. I'm just saying you might not be making correct judgment. You might not really be, what's the word? Sane minded. You might not really truly be in your true element when it comes to relationships. And also, maybe, let's talk about the conversation around standards and preference. So when we talk about standards and when we talk about preference, a lot of people tend to have this mash up about like, yo, this is what I prefer. These are the standards that I have upheld for myself. And you're like, you're not really supposed to be putting standards and preferences together, Vati. matter. Who are we to judge, right? So when we talk about preferences in a relationship, it is referred to as your individual likes, dislikes, and favorite traits in a partner, or how you prefer activities to be done. This is a preference, you know, in a partner. When you say that, ooh, these are my likes, these are my dislikes, these are the favorable traits. Now, favorable traits is not something that somebody can just go and pick up on the streets and say that, like, ooh, these are favorable traits. I like these favorable traits. These favorable traits are so favorable traits. It has to be something within their personalities, something within the things that they do already without you mentioning it that makes you say, like, I like this. This one, I like it. I like it a lot. It is my cup of tea. For example, if you have a perfect gentleman. Now, I'm not one that cares about opening doors and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. To be honest, I don't. It's not my thing. Like, I care about bread bags. I care about bread. I care about you remembering your responsibilities. For me, that's the trait, you know, that you have to be a responsible somebody. You have to be a caring somebody. Which, did you remember to buy bread? You're like, oh, wait a minute. I like this. Ooh, let me just pull up my thong, you know, so it just reaches the good levels. So yeah, for me, that's a trait that I like, responsibility and care. But there are certain people that have different kinds of traits that they prefer, or that they look at when it comes to partners. They look at when it comes to specific individuals and so forth. So we're just saying that preference in a relationship refers to individual likes and dislikes and favorite traits in a partner. And also the activities that they like. So the activities that they like, there's no sin in teaching somebody the things that you like, but there is a sin in somebody taking up everything that you like as their own. So there are certain things that, for example, if your person is a lover of guns, right? It's a lover of guns, and on Saturdays or Sundays, you know, this is the thing that they do. Now, in Namibia, when you have a lover of guns, it's kind of scary because, like, why are you so good at shooting? Like, why? Why do you want an activity like shooting guns? Like, why is that your favorite? Say, you know, it's a bit, you know, it's a bit on the shaky side because many of us are most now, you know, we don't really trust the partner like that. And we also don't want the partner to get angry and then just shoot us. And we read a lot of newspapers. There's a lot of negative press around relationships and passion crimes. And it should be so. So, yeah, it should be so because it is a negative thing that's happening and affecting us. So, for example, if somebody is a lover of guns and they do extra activities and go extra miles in terms of enhancing their hobby, then that is something that you would like, oh, okay, that is an activity. That is a nice activity. And you don't know up until you try something, whether you like it or you don't like it. And I'm not talking like, you know, there's this thing that, queer people do, especially towards the heterosexual. They usually say things like, yeah, you never know until you try it. You know, you never know until you try it. You might like it. Well, no. That sometimes you just know, kucha, no, I'm not like that. Eh, that one is not something that you have to experiment to try it. Kucha, maybe I am. Not unless it's something that you would like to do. But the activities that you do, you can be lured into the activities, but this doesn't mean that you abolish your activities completely. And if you guys have similar love for certain activities, then I think that's something you guys can bond on. So there are types of preferences. There's physical preference, there's personality, there's lifestyle, there's activity-based preferences. So height, physical. Okay, let's not go to height, but let's go to physical preference. Physical preference is something like height, hair, color, general looks, you know, that's the physical. Like, ooh, I like my women thick and I like them short and I like them tall and I like them round and I like them yellow and I like them a bit on the dark side. I like chocolate. I like milk. I like caramel. You know, those are things. I like women with long hair. I like women with short hair. I like women with, you know, a general look. You know, I like hippie kind of women. I don't like hippie kind of women. Those are things about, physical preference that we could most probably put in the bio of, okay, so when somebody talks about preferences and we go to physical preference, for example, we would go to height, we would go to color, we'd go to height, we'd go to color, we would go to general looks, you understand? Because there are certain people, and that's why you can find somebody that, somebody that has a preference in specific people. And when you look at the pattern of the people or the exes or the pattern of people that he or she always dates, they always look the same. It's like she or he likes a particular brand of people. You know, somebody that's with maybe has a round face or somebody that has you know, small eyes or big eyes or big lips or darkened complexion. So you always find that for the most part, most of this person's partners, right, look the same. It's almost like they could be sisters. And maybe we can take it back to a psychological thing and say, maybe you didn't heal from the first woman that looked like this, that, you know, hurt your heart. And that's why you're looking for her in every other woman. And then you start with looks. I had a friend of mine that used to date guys that looked like, I almost said his name. I almost said his name, but she had this thing where she dated guys that looked exactly like him, like her ex, and then the height also, and then the style and the swagger, and then the things that he likes also. Like it's like she particularly sorts out these things, you know. This person must be a person that is invested in law, and this is a person that is tall, this is a person that is dark, but it's not that kind of dark. It's like dark, 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 like dark chocolate kind of dark, 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 you know, and he must be slender and he must be white and he must be white and his nose must be pointy and he must have a certain swagger and he must, yeah, those are the general looks. And then every single partner after that was basically the same version of this guy that she, that I don't know, they had this on and off relationship. That wasn't really a healthy one. So every time she broke up with him or they broke up, she would always go and date somebody that looks identical to him. So it was weird. It was weird. Yeah, we can say that. Oh, those are dynamic. Like, oh. So when we talk about physical preference, that is most probably what we're talking about. And that is why you can find certain people have a certain type. So if you are into the yellow bones, it's usually not just the color. It also goes down to the features, right? So yeah. So for example, if you're into yellow bones, then the likelihood, for example, the likelihood of you constantly dating a colored, constantly dating a bastard, constantly dating a nama are very high because you're into yellow bones. You know, you're into all the light side of life. And then also when you do find somebody that's not these three tribes, that is most probably also a yellow bone, then you would glorify it a lot because I don't know. You'd glorify it a lot, like, oh, a whole Herero yellow bone, or a whole Subia yellow bone, or a whole Ndonga yellow bone, or, like, hey, you would go on about it, like, yay. Then we'd be like, okay, that's not creepy at all. But yeah, but then when you look at the yellow bones, it's not always just color. It's a certain other features, you know. The booty, the body, and the face, you know, the looks, you know. You don't just date any yellow bone. You date beautiful, you like beautiful, you like what, and you like what, most probably. So that is part of the things that we can say under preference. So that was the physical attributes, you know, the physical attributes. There are certain guys that, or there are certain people. Let's not even go to guys only, but there are certain people that don't even look or flinch at a person that is, one, maybe having too many kgs, more kgs than they want, or two, somebody that is, for example, slender. No matter how beautiful you are, no matter how nice you are, no matter what great catch you are, this person will just never, ever in their lives look at you because you are just not their type. You know? You are just not what they prefer in a partner physically. You know? It could be that you mark everything, personality, activity, lifestyle, woo! You are the greatest. But you don't look like something that they would be attracted to. And because of that, that is why. No. You're a nice girl. You're a nice person. And some people won't even smash. I'm telling you guys. Like, just because you're slender. Like, literally, just because you're slender, like, I'm not even going to touch that. Like, I like my women with meat, you know? And then sometimes, just because you're thick, like, too much for me. And also, this one goes with color as well, or ethnicity as well. There are certain guys, for example, that are intimidated by certain races. Like, for example, with Caucasians and Asian men, they are usually intimidated by the melanin women because the melanin women also carry a lot of baggage behind. They've got a lot of bum bum, okay? They got a lot of bum bum going on, and the bum bum is usually the one that is intimidating because he just has no idea what to do with it. Like, do we lift it up? Do we put it down? Do we shake it all around and do the hokey pokey? What are we gonna do about it? How are we going to do this? Oh my goodness. Yeah. And those are particular things where they can say that physical preference also plays a role. Like, it's not that I'm racist. It's just that I don't know how to handle your body type. And that is why we can't deem it racist, right? If somebody prefers all women except thick women, and then one that is his color shows up and he falls in love and gets married and has babies, it's not racism. It's just that who was there first? Because had a slender woman, for example, and that's why you see it a lot amongst interracial couples, right? There's a specific, not all interracial couples, but there is a specific thing that lingers within interracial couples. There's a specific that lingers within interracial couples. It's either if the man is white and the woman is, for example, a melanin black, right? She would either be slender and tall, looks like a model, you know? Or if she's a bit chunky or she's a bit thick, then there's something about like Mama Africa kind of vibes. Like, this is something that I've observed a lot, you know, where she has this African feel about it, and usually the person that is falling in love with Mama Africa is usually not an African. Yeah. It's not an Afrikaans guy. It's not an Afrikaans guy that is falling in love with a Vambu girl because she's got this Mama Africa vibes. Like, no. If an Afrikaans guy falls in love with a Vambu girl, then it's literally just because of that one. I think it's just because they just prefer each other's physical stuff, but then also there are different attributes, because I've noticed a lot that Awambo people and Afrikaans people are very much similar. They are extremely similar, and these similarities are the ones that draw them together. So we're talking preferences, and that's it.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any
Want to know
staff.
About Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Yeah, so we're talking preferences this evening, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I was at the hospital today and the doctor asked what I do. And then I told them what I do. And then the doctor was like, I can see it. Why? Because you're like rah 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 rah. I'm like, ha. That's how I talk normal. But anyhow, anywho, so today we're talking about preferences. Then we're maybe going to dive into the world of standards a little bit, because I think many of us misdiagnose preference we misdiagnose preference and standards. We often just jam them together and then we dish it out to people because this is what I want. This is what I like. And then we're like, is it a standard or a preference? And they're like, that's what I like. Okay. So you deal with it. So I was talking about the Afrikaans couple or the Afrikaans man and the native, they are both native. Maybe an Oshiwambo woman or a Herero woman or a Subia woman, Lozi woman, Kavango women. It's usually not because of, and that is what, it's usually not because of their Mama Africa feel. It's usually just because they have the same kinds of principles. It's because they have the same kind of it's more than just the facade of Mama Africa and oh, I'm so African and I live in my roots and woo. It's more than just that. It's more about the people that they are, and there are certain tribes that are interlinked. A lot of them get well together, or they get together and then they get well, like a Kavango guy and a Vambo girl, you know, like they get together very well. Also, you know, Zambezi men, Vambo women, they get together a lot very well. You know, Damara men, Nama men, and Vambo women, they get together very well. I don't know. The heroes kind of look like they like themselves, each other a lot. So you don't really, I don't really attend many weddings like that, because even our first couple was Tamara Vambo. Eh? Even our first couple before. And even, you know, Tatembumba. Even like, yeah, nice things. So I don't really see it with a lot of other tribes, but yeah. So that's, with outside kind of people, you know, like Europeans and Westerners, there's a certain thing about them. And also with the age gap that happens there, right? Because I think many of us talk about it, but we talk about it secretly because we don't want to offend our friends that are married, like to this 80-year-old, somebody. You're like, hey, like, I like them chasing the casket. That's what I'm attracted to. Like, I like them chasing caskets. Like, ooh! You're like, I don't know how to feel about it. I don't know if I should laugh. I don't know if I should hold on to this one. Mara, anyhow. Okay, so you like them chasing caskets. All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to contribute to our conversation tonight, the number in studio is 083-288-401. That's 083-288-401. You guys can call in and we can talk about it. We are talking about preference versus standards, or just preferences and standards aside, separately, together, whatever. So I was talking about the European guys and the African women. The African women have to have certain qualities. I've never ever seen. And also, I might be biased when I say this, but I feel like, Caucasian men from outside, no, Caucasian men in general have great taste when it comes to black women. Come argue with me. I dare you. They have immaculate taste when it comes to black women, because you don't find them with the kind of black woman that no other black people want, no other Africans want. Like, they go for the toppest of the toppest. You find Miss Universe, right? And with her dude, and her dude is a Caucasian, you know, something like that. You know, it's always like they know how to pick the best of the best. Mara, I don't know what is up with my Caucasian sisters. My Caucasian sisters are dating bums, guys. Like couch potato kind of guys. Like, whoa, they are dating couch potato kind of guys. And it's just, it's a weird. It's like, hey, there was no one else in the whole black community. The whole black community, they finished, eh? They like, guys, I don't know. Mm-mm. I've never really seen them with immaculate taste. It has always been, it just looks, I feel like the Caucasian sisters, they don't really pick like the nice ones. Like, they don't have snacks, but the Caucasian brothers, yeah, they've got snacks, you know, like she might got this, she might look like a whole goddess. like even when you look at her as a woman, you're like, wow, she's so amazing, Lily. Yeah, wow. Even I would smash and I'm straight. Yes, exactly. They look like that. And then you find our Caucasian sisters and the guy that she's dating is just not, it's the guy that we consider bottom of the barrel. We're like, I know, that guy. Which guy, one, he's balding, his body is not nice, his hair color is not nice, his general looks are not nice, his eye is a bit twitchy, and his what is not nice, and what is not nice, and I, like, there's so many not nice things, and then you just find a whole white sister, you know, and she's like, this my man. You're like, keep your man. And she's usually overprotective because she's like, yeah, that's mine. Well, nobody wants what you have, sister. No one wants what you are having, girl. How? Eat your plate alone. And also, this is like when you also flip the other side. I feel like the brothers don't know how to pick. Like, they don't pick, like, I don't think they have good taste. I think they eliminate this whole physical, because we're talking about preference, right? I think they eliminate the whole physical one. They eliminate all of it, and then they decide that, no, we're not gonna go on looks. We're not gonna go on physique. We're not gonna go on anything physical. We're just gonna jump straight to personality, lifestyle, and activities. That's all we're gonna do when we're looking for a partner, especially if she is maybe Caucasian or Caucasian. Because with the colored hands, like, I think you guys also go all out there with the colored hands and the busted hands. Like, I think you guys like pick top tier. Guys, pick top tier. And even all the, like, you guys know how to pick each other. Have you ever met a couple that just doesn't look good together? Like, you meet the couple that looks like they've never, English has never stepped foot in that relationship. Like, they look like it's straight up Oshindonga there, or Rukwangali, Gereku, you know, or Silozi. Like, they just look like that, like, yeah, wow. There's this lady in our living quarters, right? And I don't know, it irritates me so much. I don't know why it irks me so much also. I think it's because maybe I'm a hater. Like, yeah, most probably. Yeah, because, she speaks Afrikaans with her children, like, and it irks me. And the reason that it irks me is that these people are full fambus. Like, whoa! There's just nothing Afrikaans about them. Like maybe they grew up in Oranjemund, or I don't know, man. Maybe they grew up in Oranjemund. Oranjemund makes diamonds. They say we're soft. I say we're rough. Left the barber making headlines. You know, maybe. Or I don't know, man. Mara, when I see it, I'm like, it's kind of intense, man. Like, yeah. It's kind of intense, and I'm like, And it's just something that I can't do it. I don't like it. It's like, And every time she speaks, like, they speak, but it's not even the correct one. It's not even the one from the books, you know? It's the other one. And I'm like, why are you enforcing a language that you're breaking in your household? But who am I to judge? Who am I to judge? So, I've also noticed that a lot of the brothers, right, especially there by the African-American brothers, I've noticed that a lot of the brothers, they don't really go for the fine ones also. They usually go for the one that is just bottom, like, looks like they could be bottom of the barrel. You know, that, like, that, the gunk that's underneath. They look like it could be like that. And, yeah. So that's the dynamics that I saw. So that's the physical preferences, right? So there are certain types of women that would say things like, oh, I could never go out with a white guy, because it wouldn't work. I wouldn't what. And there are some people that, saying like, that would say that, oh, I could never. And that's absolutely up to you, because I mean, if it's not something that you prefer, like, come on. Like, yeah, I could never date a short person, because you don't prefer that. You don't like that. It's not your thing. It's okay. But there's some people that are also just intense. I would never date a short person. You like them short. So there's this series thing that happens with Joseph Terry. And he basically makes you guys that are in a relationship, right, exchange phones for 60 seconds. Now, I'm not really a fan of this show, but it's starting to grow on me, because, like, it's the guessing game. Because people are dating one another, guys. People are dating one another. And one of the questions that this Joseph guy asked one of the ladies, or one of the participants, was like, oh, you like them short. And then because the gentleman that she's in a relationship with is particular, like, he's short. And he's like, oh, you like them short. And she's like, yeah, I prefer short men. You're like, hello. Wow. Wow. That's deep. Wow. Like, okay. And then there are certain people that don't care. Like, I don't care if you're short or you're tall. I don't care. It's none of my business. But fairly for me, Mina, I care about height. You can call me a heightalist. I care about height. I care very much, because I'm already thick. Like, you can be whatever body type you are, but tall you must be. Wow. Cannot be young stoodler. Stoodie. Alrighty. So, the next one that we are going to dive into, we've done with the, so what we're doing right now is types of preferences. The first one is physical preference, where we covered height, we've covered hair color, we've covered general looks, and, you know, preferences. Those are the physical preferences. Those are physical attributes, you know. There are certain men also that have a thing for toes. Like, literally, it's like an audition for them. Like, the first thing you do when you rock up, it's literally, it's like, they might trap you into it, like, say, like, oh no, we're going to meet and we're going to the beach where you have to take off your shoes, you know, because we're going to the water, you can't wear sneakers, right? Or, please wear open shoes, you know, open shoes so that they can check out your toes. Now, if your toes are not pretty, right, then it's over. If your toes are not pretty, then like, it's like, yeah, maybe I can smash, but it's a real deal breaker for them. You're like, what? Like, yeah, I've got a thing for toes, especially if they're painted white. Like, ooh, that's my thing. And you know, especially if she's chocolate and then she has like people have their preferences, guys. Like people have a thing for things, you know, and there are also certain people that like certain kinds of hands. For example, your hands must be like a specific way. There are certain guys that are completely turned off by big hands. Like, this hand of yours is very big. Like, I don't like girls with big hands, you know? And then there are also guys that are turned off by guys with, by girls with, who wear large sizes. Like, oh, she wears size 9. Ah, no. No. She wears size 9 shoes. Ah, no. You know? And it could be because of things that were said to them. It could be because of what they were taught. Because there's something that my mom told me. I can't say it was when I was younger, but I don't think she told me. I think I overheard it, but now I just always think that my mother told me things, you know, because like obesity or whatever. So, she said, passion donga, if a woman has a big mouth, like a wide perimeter, like big mouth, I'm not talking about lips and I'm not talking about a tongue. I'm talking about like a wide mouth, like a big mouth where you can like put your fist in her mouth, like a big mouth. It usually represents a bigness somewhere else. So, like, so every time and this is something that has stuck with me. Every time I see a woman with a larger than I would assume to be normal mouth, I'm always like, you're cookie doing things. Because my mother said so. So this is something that my mom said, and I think I took it a bit too seriously, but I'll ask her about this. If she remembers or what is it about, I'll say that you guys said that I must ask her, you know, what is it about? And that's one of the physical attributes. And there are certain people that just like girls with wide mouths. Like, I like her mouth big, you know, like swallow, swallow, swallow. Tell me where you wanna go. Just keep your body closed and don't let go. Swallow, swallow, swallow. You know. They like them for the different reasons, and also maybe they are great kisses and whatever. But that's the thought that I have every single time. It's just like, shoe size, for example, when it comes to men. Like, yo, brah, size 4. And know how I feel about size 4. Size 5, size 6, nah, like 8 up. You're gonna be a size 20 score, but 4, like, yeah. And those are physical preference, and those are things that you don't like, you wouldn't think that somebody's paying attention to it, but there are people that are paying attention to it. Like, they would notice your shoes, and you think it's for shoe game, and the other gender is like, size 4 foot. Like, what size do you wear? Size 3? Like, hey. Like, my auntie grandmother. Like, she's short and tiny. Like, what 1.7 or 1.8 dude, you know, wears a size 3? You're like, yeah. What else is a size 3? Alrighty, you guys can call in. Please don't hesitate to call in. Please don't make missed calls, guys. Just call in. The number in studio is 083-288-401. That is the number in studio. It's 083-288-401. Alright, that's the number in studio, and that is me missing calls. I don't know. You guys are, it's raining, so most probably the calls are just network issues. But anyways, so that was physical. preferences. We are now moving on to personality. Personality. So personally for me, when a woman says that, he's kind of crank personality, I'm like, I don't buy it from the get-go. I'm like, I don't buy it. I don't buy it simply because that's usually the statement that we use. That's usually the statement that we use when someone is not, it's not all that. It's not giving. Mm-mm. It's not giving and, you don't really like them. When somebody says, this, my guy has a great personality, we're like, you know, like, no. We're not into great personalities, but gents, no. We are into other qualities. You must have great qualities, like great, great qualities, you know. And that personality thing, like, oh, he's got a great personality. Like, if a woman ever says that about you, just know that she's not feeling you, because those are not the things that you don't fall in love with personality. You fall in love first with other things, you know, looks. Yeah, you fall in love with looks, you fall in love with shoe size, you know, fall in love with walks, you fall in love with the way they talk, fall in love with those things that you can see, you can touch, you can feel, you know, stuff like that. Personality is so inside. Personality is like you saying like, oh, I like the way, I like the her belly button, like for a person that doesn't wear crop tops. Personality is like that. It's like, it's so under, like, what you mean? It's so under. So there was nothing on top that fascinated you. There was nothing on top that made you like, you know, like, okay, I like it. Because even for the social media people, you know, first of all, the first thing they go and do is check out your pictures. Why? Because they have to be physically attracted. They have to, you know, like what they see. Now you are out here like, yeah, personality. Not unless, like, yeah, I almost said something, but that would be insensitive, you know. If I said that, that would be very, very much insensitive. So I'm just saying, right? Personality, it's a thing. Like, yeah, some people say personality, I don't know, he's got a great personality. I'm like, yeah, he's not picking heat in his pants. If he's got a great personality and that's the first thing that a woman says about her person, then you know that there by the bedroom, there's nothing happening there. There's like, it's brother and sister things. It's like, yeah. Scissoring. Yeah, like that. That's what's happening over there. When somebody says, oh, we've been together for 7 years and he's just got a great personality. You're like, in 7 years, the first thing you can say about him is great personality. You can't say, I just love him. When you say, I just love him, you're like, He's my personal person. Then you know that also in the bedroom it's happening. Now you're telling us after 7 years, great personality. How? This person is probably there for their money. We don't know. Because how can you be, you fell in love with his personality first, what? No. You must tell us other things, which are always he's a great person. Like, yeah. When you say great person, we're like, great person. Like, we get it. But, personality. How? Personality is the worst. Because personality is also for best. Personality is for your friends. Personality is for your grandmother. Personality is for relatives. Personality is not for somebody that you smash. Oh, no. So don't be complimented by somebody telling you about personality things. Alright. So when we talk about personality things, right? Not unless somebody goes into detail about your personality and they can pinpoint, right? Certain things and certain attributes within your personality that they see as a bonus, then maybe we can undoubtedly say that it is not because you're not packing heat, right? As the gossipers. Okay. So, part of the personality thing is that, part of the personality preference is that sense of humor. Now, sense of humor is one that every gentleman must have. Like, if you don't have a sense of humor, vakwe, then don't go into relationships. Like, or maybe go into relationships with somebody that is also just not into laughter. Because a lot of women, they first fall in love with a physical. And then, do you know where you get her? Even if you don't have the other qualities after that, you get her with personality. You get her with sense of humor. But she first likes what she sees, right? Then you uppercut with a sense of humor. Nobody wants to be in a relationship where we cannot laugh. Nobody wants to be in a relationship where we cannot, it doesn't mean we're talking about other people, but we can also just look at each other when something funny happens or when somebody looks a certain way or whatever. And we can just laugh, you know, and have a great sense of humor. Somebody that is a comedian by heart, somebody that can make you laugh and make you giggle and make you feel alive, you know, because the lungs also have to be moving, you know, and the stomach muscles also have to be moving. And especially if you're working on your stomach, to have a funny guy helps, right? If you're working on your stomach, to have a funny guy helps with your stomach, because then you're always laughing and then the muscles are also getting accustomed to the fact that as we are happy-go-lucky hands. But then also the problem with that one that's making you laugh, Kaume, is that he's also most probably feeding you. Ay, that that's making you laugh is most probably feeding you, so you're always eating. Like, so the stomach doesn't really go away because you're putting in calories, you're packing heat. They say that you can tell that people are happy if you see them in the first year of the relationship and they got fat. That's how you know them. Yes. Mm. Because there's a lot of eating that is done in a relationship, guys. A real one. There's a lot of eating that happens. there's a lot of eating that happens in a real relationship. Most of you guys are still slender after you guys have been dating for like 10 years together because... Right? You guys are drinking all the time. That's what you guys do. You guys don't eat. You guys don't Netflix and chill. You guys are not at home. You guys are not smashing. You guys are mostly at bars. Yeah. And maybe it's just the way you are. But I know even the most slender people also pick up a little bit of something when they are in happy relationships, right? They pick up weight. We all do. We all do. All of us. If you get into a happy situation, you pick up weight instantly because you are happy. Your heart is happy. Also, you are eating food. You are eating, even if it is just macaroni. And macaroni, that dry macaroni, you are eating that dry macaroni with your whole heart and happiness because you're also texting. And you're like, no, you can just put in water. Mommy will eat cornflakes with water. You're like, yeah, banana. All right. So a sense of humor and social energy, homeboy versus a social butterfly. And the social energy also is how you conduct yourself when you get into a space. Most of us are meeting people in different environments. We're meeting people in environments which often has other people in these environments and ecosystems, you understand? So with this, how you conduct yourself in other environments and how you conduct yourself there also plays a role on being noticed and being seen by the opposite gender. And also it contributes to the things that people prefer. You understand? So, for example, many of us are meeting at parties. Many of us are meeting in shops. Many of us are meeting in church. Many of us are meeting in elevators. Many of us are meeting, I don't know, radio. Many of us are meeting everywhere, right? And part of how we meet and if we continue the conversation, right, is usually from how we conduct ourselves in that moment. So if you are at an uncomfortable party, for example, you're at an uncomfortable party and you go and stand at the corner and then some girl also comes and stands at the corner and you guys are at an uncomfortable party and then you say something like, yo, the last time I was uncomfortable like this was at my confirmation. You know, and it's something that would... It's something that would make another person laugh, you know, make another person be like, you're only confirmation. Like, for real, confirmation. Like, I've been in, like, you know, in awkward situations for a while. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. That's how you guys conduct it. That's how we run with it. That's how we can maybe, like, you know, start talking, that kind of energy, that social energy. And also there are certain, yeah, like the homeboy vibe. The homeboy vibe is a chilled vibe. Like I personally prefer the homeboy vibe because I like to not be the center of attention. I don't like to be center stage. I like to be the one that is making sure that everything goes right for the person that's on center stage. I don't know if you get it, but if you get it, you get it. Yeah. Like, I like that. I like being the one that's making sure that the stage is moving and everything, the lights and the glare. And, you know, I like being in control. Yeah, I like being in control. So for me, the homeboy vibe is nice. So that's somebody that's not too at the middle, too loud. I want somebody extremely funny, you know? You have to be extremely funny. But I don't want you getting to the party and then you are the life of the party. Like for me, that makes me a little uncomfortable. We can be the life of the party together if we're going to be the life of the party. Yeah, we can be social butterflies together. Maybe we are the ones that are killing it with conversation. We are the ones that are making people laugh. We are the stand-up comedians, you know. We are the ones that are telling stories. We are the ones, like, as a unit, yeah, that one I can deal with. Mara, the guy that is cracking jokes the whole time, I will most probably never talk to that person. If I ever find you in a setting and you are the social butterfly, you are the one that's dancing, you're the one that everybody is calling, you're the one that like, oh, Fera, like, woo. Like, for me, that's too much attention. I will not even look at you, my friend. I will not even look at you. I'll be like, ooh, now. I like homeboy vibes. I like homeboy vibes with a flair of a social butterfly. Because, you know, homeboy vibes are people that can have conversations with you and just you. I'm starting to sound like a selfish somebody. But okay. Yeah, that is. Somebody that can have a conversation with you. A meaningful conversation, an in-depth conversation. And is not really bothered about everything else that is happening. Because they are not center stage. Now, if you're dating a social butterfly, that social butterfly, everybody wants a piece of that social butterfly. And it is more like a communal butterfly. It's like, oh, you must come here and cocoon with us. You must come here, cocoon with us. Yeah, you must come here and fly with us. You must come here and show your pretty colors. You must come here. And those kinds of people are usually the types of people that leave their girlfriends or their boyfriends, right, at a table alone at a party because everybody wants a piece of them. So I'm not really into the social butterfly thing. Like, And I also don't like being the social butterfly. I don't like being center stage. I'm more, except like with family. With family, I feel like it's a bit different because, with family, you miss them. You miss them. You haven't seen them in a while. You wanna be with them and you're also hoping that your person is also comfortable. And I know that you can never, not unless you're me, but you can never truly be comfortable at anybody else's house. But I think for me, I've allowed myself to fit in. I've allowed myself to fit in and to really just have my own relationships with my in-laws. Have my own relationships so that my relationship doesn't revolve around Habibi. You know, it doesn't revolve around him where if he's not there, then I'm not going, then I can rock up and go and sit there by myself. You know, I can call and just go and sit there by myself. I can do that. And because I've created my own relationship with them. I've created my own relationship where I'm my own dynamics. I didn't tell you what happened. So Udizemba comes and my mom-in-law is like, no, you guys go ahead. I'm going to meet you guys there like on the 26th. Wherever, like if you guys are going to be up north, because we were not sure about where we're going to be going for the holidays. So she's like, oh no, if you're going up north, then I'm definitely going to guys see you guys on the 26th. If you guys are going to be there a day after Christmas. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Like we'll be waiting for you. So we basically stay so that we can have a Christmas with her. Because we wanted to have a Christmas with her. So, or even a day after Christmas with her, it doesn't matter for us. And then I'm calling her and I'm like, when are you coming? You know, when are you coming? And the phone is not going through. And then I try WhatsApp and then it's not going through. And then I leave a message and it's, you know, and then she calls and then she's like, oh, I'm going to South Africa. Like, I was so jealous. I was deeply jealous. And I didn't know. Like, if that is how jealous it feels like, then I was so unhappy. I threw a tantrum. Like, I really did throw a tantrum. I didn't throw a tantrum because she's not coming. I didn't throw a tantrum. I didn't throw a tantrum because she told us fibs. She didn't actually tell us fibs. She literally told me that you're not the type of person that I can just tell things like that. I'm to say I'm already a difficult one. Cause you're like, I'm like true last born there by my mother-in-law. I'm like true last born. Like I'm the one that's after Habibi. Like, yeah, I'm the true last born there. Like, I want all their attention. Like, I want, hey. And she's like, oh, have you okulongwe ni nimaya changa ongelo? I'm like, what? Like, but I thought you're my bestie. Like, what you doing in South Africa? She's like, undake fudo mo na wange. I'm like, no! You went to Kefudo without me. And I threw a fit. I honestly did. And, there was something that I wanted to do, but luckily we were not with the kids or anything. I literally just rolled on the ground like a 2-year-old. You know how 2-year-olds like throw tantrums in the shop? I did that. I did that on the bed and I was so upset. I was so upset that she was having fun without me. I was so upset that she was having fun with other kids. Like, I was so jealous. I was deeply jealous. Like, oh, So is this how you're gonna be? Like, oh, you're gonna be going on holidays without me, your real child? Like, what? Like, I was so not happy. I was not happy. I was green with envy. I was green with jealousy. I was straight up jealous. And I was like, I even asked, like, is this what it feels like? Cause it kind of feels weird. And then I realized that I've never really been jealous. I've never truly been jealous. But I think by my mom-in-law, they're like, yeah, the entitlement is definitely there. Like, oh, it's mine. It's my mother. It's mine. Like, yeah. And I think it's because there by her, I'm not measuring. Like, I'm like Nyelo. At my house, at my own house, I'm measuring. But there by my mother-in-law, I'm like, she's like, Unge Pinheiro. I'm like, no, She treats my daughter and I the same, like we're babies. And I think I like it. I think I like it a lot. That's the one place that I don't have to be an adult, or the one place that I don't have to really like pull up my pants and pull up my socks, what. I can just be me. I can literally just watch it. Like, I can literally just eat my popcorn and I can lay on the couch all day. And she's like, Papi Ki, ooh. I'm like, So you can imagine the jealousy that I felt when she went with my brother-in-law and his wife and the children to South Africa. And they went everywhere, by the way. They went everywhere. Chom, they went everywhere. So it's the type of holiday that you can't even really compete with, because it's like, you can't really compete with this holiday. Like, oh yeah, we went to Swaziland. You're like, Oh, and then we went to Lesotho. You're like, And then Durban. And you're like, And then Pretoria. And then, And then we went to Port Elizabeth. And then we went to Durban. Like, Sure. Like, you can't really compete with that philosophy. You can't really compete. So tonight we're talking, preferences. So we have jumped from physical Preferences to personality preferences. And part of the personality preferences is a sense of humor, social energy. If the person is a homeboy or a social butterfly, a homebody or a social butterfly. And those are the things that now give attributes, like, you know, they combine each other with, they combine with everything. So with these personality traits, one would also be left with a thought of, so if I didn't have these qualities, and that's where men get duped all the time. If I didn't have these character traits, if I didn't have this looks, if I didn't have this personality or this lifestyle or this activities, so my partner would never. Now, many of us, we would like to believe, right, that our partners would love us, you know, regardless, you know, because they love us and the people that we are. Like, but the truth is that it doesn't work like that. If you just become short tomorrow, yeah, I don't think I can do this. If you just wake up yellow bone, I don't think I can do this. If you know, like, if you just wake up ginger, I don't think I can do this. Can't be, you know, I'll try and change you. I'll try and dye your hair. You know, like, that. I don't think I can do this. I don't think we're meant for each other. I don't think that this is something that's going to work between the two of us. So, you know? And if you just become a nasty person, for example, or you don't laugh anymore and you are not funny at all, like you've just become dry. It's like you wrote all your jokes on a paper in the first couple of months. You were just dishing them. But Tanti, you're not even really a funny person. You don't even enjoy stand-up comedy. You don't like nothing funny. There's nothing fun about you. Then those are the things that would be like, I don't really think that I like this person. And these are the things that we're talking about preference, right? So these two attributes are the things that would make anybody say ask questions like, if I was deaf, wouldn't you like me? You know? Or, you know, if I was blind, would you like me? You know, if I had no chest, would you like me? If I was half butterfly and half sea, you know, would you like me? And that doesn't even make sense, but it's a question. You must answer it, you know. And some people would be honest and say, no, I wouldn't like you because I'm not into that. And that would apparently hurt your feelings. And that's where the question comes in. Is my partner using me? Is my partner using me for my body? Is my partner using me for my looks? Is my partner using me for my hair color? Is my partner using me for my sense of humor? Because now your partner can't go anywhere without you because you are so funny and you chill with everybody. So now, like, come with me. So you can go and break the ice. Then they throw you into the circle. And then they're like, look, it's like having a personal clown. Like, oh, she's a stand-up comedian. She works for radio. Oh, I hate that. I hate that so much. Like, oh no, she works in the radio. So she talks. So she can talk. And then somebody will say, tell her something funny. You're like, what? Or laugh for me. You're like, what? Like, what do you mean laugh? Like, are you funny? You know? Like, did you tell me a joke so that I have a reason to laugh? Or you think that people just go around with pockets full of laughter? You know? And then they laugh. At an insult, but okay, you know? And those are the little questions that come about and make one think that, okay, so if I didn't have this body, would my partner love me? Is my partner using me for my body? Is my partner using me for my looks? Is my partner using me for my financial standing? Is my partner using me for, is my partner using me for something, right? Because it's these types of little conversations, especially for you people that say things like, oh, I'm not really into dating dark girls, but you kind of get it. Like, you know, I'm not really into thick women, but you kind of like, yeah, but you can get it. And then you're like, so you are not really into kind of women, Mara. Oh, okay. Like, so you're really not into that, but, oh, okay. Like, that's nice. So you're not into that, but, oh, okay. And then now this person, this is where they start to feel like, yeah, but if you're not really into that, then what you're doing with me? Like, yeah, but you are an exception. So you don't really like short people, but I'm an exception. You don't really like unemployed chicks, but I'm an exception. You don't really like dark in complexion girls, but I'm an exception. Am I being used for something else? And that's where Esther Perelli comes in. So, good evening to you. If you have just joined us, the number in studio is 083-288-401. And we are having a conversation about preferences. So the idea is to talk about preferences versus standards. And if we take it from there, then we might dive into something else. But for now, the question of using me, if you are being used or not, right? Also comes from the preference and the personality. I mean, the preference and the standards that we had set for ourselves. Now, if these standards and preferences that we, you know, we like, and the ones that we have set and the ones that we have created and the ones that our environments have also created within us, you know, nature versus nurture. If these preferences or standards come about and they are not met, then the question of, is your partner using you or not? But ladies and gentlemen, we're about to dive into our first therapy session for the Monday. And this is Dr. Esther Perelli. And she's going to be talking about partners using. But it's a therapy session. So we're going to be listening in to a couple having complaints, you know, maybe, or she's going to be giving us a TED talk about something. And she's going to explain to us where it most probably comes from. So let's take it from there. And we as Eagle Media House do not claim any ownership of any of the clips that we are playing. It's strictly for illustration. I would say illustration, Mara. It's not really about illustration because you guys can't see it. So everything that we play here is strictly for learning purposes, and that is about it. So ladies and gentlemen, please do enjoy. And on the other side of this conversation, we're going to continue with our preferences, versus standards. And we're going to dive into preferences versus standards. And we're going to talk about how it is. So personally, or from what we have covered, there are different types of preferences, right? There is the physical preference, there's a personality preference, there's the lifestyle preference, and then there's activity-based preference. So part of the lifestyle preferences are travel habits, like she also likes going to Rome, she also likes the coast, she also likes the north. Travel preferences, career focus, you know, she's also very ambitious, or she's ambitious, I like that. And health and wellness and routines, she goes to the gym, I like that. You know, like, she works, she looks out for herself, she looks after her body, I like that. Or cooking skills, like her whole page is just full of cooking stuff, I love that, I like that, you know. Lifestyle, so somebody can also be like, I prefer a woman that is more career focused and more health and wellness focused with great cooking skills or traveling habits. And then there's activity based, preferred date nights, vacation style, movies, genres, and music and stuff like that. So that's activity based, right? Where you guys most probably both like I'm a piano, or you guys are both into soul, or you guys are both into R&B, or you guys are both into a mixture of music. For me, my personal preference when it comes to music is I like English music. Yeah, I like English music that is slow, that has a meaning, that's depth. You know, I like things that I must decipher. Like I like riddles in music. So I cannot be listening to go 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 chim 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 chim. Like for me, that's like it's like a waste of my brain cells. Like I cannot listen to music for beats. No, I don't even hear the beat. I don't care about the beat. I like the message. I'm a wordsmith. I like words. So that's my thing. So for example, part of the activities is like the type of music you like. Like maybe we might, You like jazz too? Oh, do you know who and do you know who? Like, oh, then that is something that we can relate upon, and like records and like the old school kind of music and R&B kind of music. Who was your favorite rapper back in the day? Like something, you know, like things like that. Those are activity based preferences. Like that, like the types of movies that you watch. Yeah, some people, I remember when I was a little younger, when I was actually not a little, when I was younger, today I said I was 24, guys, like I was a what? Anyhow. So, when we were younger, my friend and I used to love horror movies. Like literally. I don't know if it was we liked to be afraid or we liked the adrenaline that came with being scared. I don't know. But we used to like horror movies. And right now, I think that life is a horror on its own. I just want to watch comedy only. Comedy only or romantic films. Like, oh, I want to see happy endings, guys. Like, not happy endings like that, but I want to see where people end up together against the odds. Like, beautiful stuff. I want people to meet in the park. I want those light-colored movies. You know, those like with trees and butterflies and like that's all because whoa, hereby reality, it kind of sucks, right? But before I take it very far, let us dive into partnerships.
It's this and that. It's a bunch of things all together and it's complicated. It's not this or that. Is he a narcissist? Am I a love addict? The world is a little bit more than that. At least how I understand the story. I may say the same thing had I seen you more, but I can't say it for you today. I can't claim or disclaim. I can just pass over some of the power and the responsibility back on you. You're giving us too much power. We are common mortals too. We sometimes think we need to know, like you're asking me to know and to give you certainty that I don't have. And if I pretend to have it, then I look more powerful than I really am.
Hey Esther, I was in a nearly 5-year life partnership with someone that I am now very concerned used me for a visa. I sponsored this person for permanent residency here in Australia. But unfortunately, about a year ago, they walked out, and then I subsequently found out they had been cheating on me the entire relationship. This was really deeply distressing to me because at the time, this was my deepest experience of love that I'd ever had. Deep care, love, and kindness. I've never really believed anyone loved me as much as this person did. And I've never really believed more in a connection between myself and another person. So I was deeply shocked. At the time, this person characterized their behavior as something they didn't really understand, as self-sabotage, and as something to do with their family history. But a therapist I was seeing at the time said to me that she was pretty convinced that I had been used for a visa, had been completely manipulated, that this person was a psychopath or a narcissist, and that I didn't see the relationship myself with him clearly because I was just so desperate to be loved and that I don't really know what real love feels like or should look like. Facts have come to light that probably support the psychologist's assessment, and yet there's a part of me that wants to hold on to the felt experience of love. I'm just wondering, Esther, if you can help me unpack whether I should believe my psychologist's assessment, whether I don't really see myself or relationships clearly, and how do I move forward if I don't really know what real love feels like? Thank you.
You're listening. Do you recognize yourself?
Yeah. I think I've dissected it so much. I think in that voice note, kind of detached from it, but listening to it yeah, brings it back.
Mm-hmm.
It still feels kind of unbelievable to me, the story.
And the piece that feels unbelievable is what? How could I be with somebody who cons me? Is the feeling I felt real?
I think the relationship and my experience in it is completely polarized from the facts that came to light. Sometimes I just feel still shocked and I try to reconcile the person that I knew. And then when I have these memories, I try to fixate on, was there a sign? Is that really him? Is that like feeling I had? Was it totally off?
Tell me a little bit the story of your relationship.
Yeah. So I live in Melbourne in Australia, which I think is important to know because we went through one of the world's longest and strictest lockdowns in 2020. And I think that frames the relationship in some ways. We met just after the first lockdown, before the second very long lockdown. So our first date was at his house in his bedroom where we made like a little Italian dinner situation. And it was very, I felt, and I think he felt, well, I don't know what he felt, but at the time I interpret him to feel very connected very quickly. He told me about his mother's passing. She had died from suicide when he was 21. And he told me that because he wore her wedding ring as a necklace on him. And it was a shock, I think, to my partner when she died by suicide because they were extremely close.
And how many years after her death did you meet him?
9. And he was very angry about it. He wouldn't want to talk about it. He was very just angry. And I felt as the relationship went along, he became much more open to talking about her. Her favorite music was George Michael, and he would start to play it on the record player and we would dance in the living room and he would just talk more about her. And I felt like I felt that through our relationship, he had in some ways connected with me in a way like with her, in the sense that we had just a very like loving bond. There was a lot of physical affection in that was very like, wherever I went, he was like very, wanted to be very close. It felt like we cherished each other. But after about a year, we had lots of problems with sex where he just couldn't get aroused. I personally thought it had to do with this idea of love and sex for him being quite separated. I sensed this attachment with him, but I also, it took him so long to even start talking about his mom and being able to share and talk about missing her and talking about their relationship and how, you know, how much he missed her. And just instead of being angry, this like opening up, I sensed that the love and the sex was related to this.
Did you check it with him?
I tried to talk to him about this. He did not want to go there. He kept saying to me, so because the reason I bring up the COVID thing is because it's also happened as we moved in together in another lockdown. And his description or like explanation was that he'd lost his libido, that he just felt like the walls were caving in. We had visa issues and he kept proposing to do student visas. And I didn't want to do that because I didn't think he wanted to study. It's a lot of money. And then they put a cap on how much you can earn afterwards. And so I took it upon myself to call a lawyer who advised us to do a partner visa. And I pushed him for the partner visa, to be honest, because I just wanted to not have the insecurity of the visa issues going on. I just wanted to...
Partner visa means that you make a request for him?
Yeah. In Australia, marriage and de facto are the same rights. So being married doesn't give you any more legal rights than just being in a de facto relationship. And a partner visa is essentially like a marriage visa. It's the same like in the US to get married for a visa. It's the same mm-hmm. thing. early on in our relationship, he brought up the visa issues in terms of not wanting to be in the relationship, or at least saying, I don't know what's happening with my visa. And I said, I understand that. I had lived for a long time in Europe. I had dealt with visa issues. I had known what it had been like to be not sure if you want to stay or go somewhere, and that impacting relationships. So I had said, if you're here for a good time and not a long time and you just want to be free and date lots of people, I get that. Or also, if you're scared that you will get attached, and then if the visa doesn't work out, then it's not just the disappointment of the visa, it's also the disappointment of the relationship ending.
So it's love or the visa?
Yeah. And I just felt like, for me, I could sense I had a strong connection to him. I didn't know if it was going to turn into a relationship, but I wanted a relationship on the table.
How did you experience his sexual distancing from you? You've spent a year now trying to understand, reinterpret, make meaning, and try to deal with your heartbreak on one side, with your feeling deceived on the other.
Mm-hmm.
And then with your feeling like you were a fool on yet another angle. Mm-hmm. And the more you try to put all the pieces together, and the more the heartbreak is deeper. And what I'm not clear is, do you want to know, is my thinking valid, accurate, legit? Does it make sense what I'm thinking? Or are you saying, how does one square feeling deeply cared for and loved to then find out that the person we thought loved us deeply was lying to us throughout the relationship? I think I would know to listen to you differently or better if I have a better sense as to what it is that you hope for in our conversation and where you are at this point in your life. Is it how to let go? Is it how to make sense? Is it how to trust your own feelings about yourself so that you don't think, how do I know that when I feel something, it's real? They're not all the same. They're all inside of you. I totally understand that. But we have one conversation, and I think we may be able to hone in on one of these aspects.
I think it's, for me, this idea of what I felt to be so real. And that realness wasn't what I felt to be like, you know, fireworks or like crazy romance, but actually safety and like feeling so connected to another person and feeling like that in that moment you're deeply seen and seeing the other person.
And you think on his side it was a performance? What leads you to question, was any of this true or real?
Well, my thinking was more along these lines of, I guess what I said earlier, love and sex not being able to be, for him, something he could do together. And the more that he fell in love and felt safe, the less he wanted to have sex. Also, in the beginning,
how to make love with the woman you love.
Yes, I don't think he knew that. And I also feel, this is my felt sense, that when we did have sex in the beginning, it was not loving. It was, for him, quite aggressive almost, always from behind, pulling hair, like very, it wasn't like facing each other, never eye contact. When we weren't having sex, that's all he wanted. Lots of spooning, looking in each other's eyes, heaps and heaps of closeness. It was like in sex, he wanted no closeness, no intimacy. That was my sense of it.
And that was throughout?
Yes, that was throughout.
So that tells you one thing, is that this did not intensify because he felt closer to you. This was there from day one.
This disconnect between...
Well, you can call it a disconnect, or you can call it if I kiss you from behind, I don't want to see your face. Mm. I don't want to look into your eyes. I want to be able to be more ruthless. That mm-hmm. ruthlessness intensifies my excitement. I don't want tender. That's a totally different vocabulary. Tender mm. will come after
mm.
or before or around, but not at that, mm. not in that experience itself.
Mm.
It may have something to do with the disconnect, and sometimes it has nothing to do with the disconnect, but it says my vocabulary, mm. the way I get excited, what frees me, what allows me to let go, is a certain kind of objectification, is a certain kind mm. of ruthlessness that mm. is highly charged and pleasurable. When I spoon, when I look at you in the eyes, when I hold you, when I caress you, that's a different range of expression.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. potentially, because I don't know the man, in mm. his book, it becomes more of the intimate, tender, caring, vulnerable. Mm. Vulnerable doesn't go with lust.
Mm.
But when you say that this was there from the start, then it's less as he became more intimate with me and as he began to experience a certain type of intimacy with me that he had known with his mom, he felt less and less attracted to me and desirous of me
mm.
because it began to almost feel slightly incestuous.
Mm.
And nobody wants in their good mind to have sex with their mom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they started to feel like two separate experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And he began to be more and more sexually removed from me. And he took mm-hmm. his sexuality somewhere else.
I think so. I felt like sex was impossible. As in, like, I also lost it.
As in, like, ick? Like, too much, too close, too entrapped?
Not for me. But I felt this block, like we weren't that, we were something else. Like, but I never for a moment questioned that he didn't love me, because the physical touch and the desire to be close to me and the mm-hmm. desire to like kiss me and be all in my body and smells.
So what makes you question it now?
Well, what this therapist said to me, she said that he was a psychopath because the things that came out, so how I found out was after he walked out.
How did he walk out?
About 6 months before we broke up, he called me from Bali. We'd been in Bali together and he stayed on. He was a photographer. He stayed on to do some work and he called me bawling his eyes out, saying, I'm so sad about our sex life. I don't know what to do about it. Just uncontrollably crying. Like hysterical almost. And I was quite shocked, but in a way I was also happy because I was like, oh great, we can talk about this now, because for so long he wouldn't want to talk about it. Just, oh, it's COVID. I've got no libido. It has nothing to do with you. I still find you attractive. So I was like, great, we can talk about this now, but I'm a bit worried because you're so upset. It to me signals that you don't think that this is something we can solve.
Mm-hmm. And it's not the first time you're experiencing this either.
What do you mean by that?
You're not the first person with whom the love-lust split.
I don't know if that's the case, because I was his first long-term serious relationship. Before that, I think he'd only been in open things or not committed things. He'd never brought anyone home to his parents before, as far as I know. So
you're questioning everything at this moment.
Yes, I still question everything. So yeah, so he called me from Bali, bawling his eyes out. And I said, I actually think we can solve this. This is great. Now you want to talk about it. I said, I feel like we're not sexual anymore. Like, I don't see you as sexual. You don't, the whole, yeah, the vocabulary, the tone of our relationship is loving, but it's not. And I said, we need to create some
tension.
Desire. Tension, yes, exactly. And so then we tried to do that for, say, like, yeah, 3-6 months. And then he sat
me
down.
What did you try to do?
Well, we bought the Esther Perel course, but we made it through one episode. This is not a testament to your course. It was, I think, okay. that we didn't really do it. We did one episode. And then he went traveling to Japan. And I had just finished my master's and I was handing in my PhD proposal. And I really wanted to celebrate that because it's a big thing to hand in the proposal and get a scholarship. And he went out and was out late and I was really upset. And when he came home, I said, I don't know if this is working. And I meant like what we're doing right now, mm-hmm. but I felt something like snap in the air almost.
He took the opportunity.
And he said in a very small voice, maybe like half an hour later in bed, you don't have to love me. You don't have to put up with my bullshit or something. And I was like, what's going on? I said, that's not what I was trying to say. I was just saying, this isn't working. Like you've talked about this sex life thing. You want to fix it. And now you're like, not even wanting to be there to celebrate for me the next day. You're going to be hungover, da, da, da. And he just closed up and said, I don't know what you're talking about. And then the next day we kind of spoke a bit more and I said, look, if we're not having sex and you're not putting effort in, then we're like flatmates. Like we need to work on this. He went to Japan, came back and said, I don't feel the same things for you anymore. I just don't feel love anymore. I was a bit shocked, but I was also trying to, in that moment, I really loved him. And I was like, your happiness is important to me. If you don't feel that way, I don't know what I can do about that, but I'd like to go to therapy to break up well, because mm-hmm. I thought we were soulmates. Like, this is the most I've ever been loved by someone, the most I've ever loved someone. And I thought that was mutual and I don't know how that just goes away. But I think if that's what you want to do, then we need to do that. Then the next day he came back and was like, oh no, like it's all coming back to me. Can I touch you? He wanted the touch. He couldn't like deal with the, then we were broken up, you know, or that we were breaking up. And he was like, can I touch you? Actually, I don't want to leave. I don't want to leave. I'm not broken. You're not broken. We can fix this. And to which I said, there seems to be a lot going on. I think maybe it would be a good idea for you to move out for a little bit and us to go to therapy. I want to fix this. I'll do everything in my power to fix this, but it seems like something's going on. And I think we need like just a little bit of space to work through that. Mm-hmm. Then the next day he came back and said, no, I think I need to do this on my own. I need to break up. And then it was basically like that for a week till I like said, I can't do this anymore. Like this is like whiplash. You have to get out. You have to move out. And then as soon as he moved out, it was like the bricks started to, like the house started to fall down. I heard from someone that he'd been texting girls. He then said to me, yes, but it was just in a friendly way. And for me, it signals how unhappy I was. And I think this is related to sex. And I think I haven't been in love or there's been something going on with the sex thing, to which I was like, well, that takes us all the way back to like the first year of our relationship. Like, what are you saying? And then he just went back and forth. And then eventually I rang a friend of his from work who he'd stopped speaking to 6 months earlier. And she said, are you sitting down?
I don't know.
And basically said that a girl at work had put in a harassment claim about him, that he'd been an 18-year-old girl taking photos of her originally for work, but then in our house taking photos of her. And crossing boundaries by like, you know, flirting with her. And she was 18. He's 35 at this point, or 34 at this point. And then it turned out that he had also been doing OnlyFans shoots for women. I confronted him about this and he admitted to everything. And then he said, I'll meet up with you and tell you everything you want to know. And we sat for 6 hours. And he told me that he'd been sleeping with people since the beginning of the relationship, like literally from the very beginning. He slept with his ex-girlfriend and we'd had a therapist appointment booked because before I found out all this stuff, again, I wanted to break up well. I didn't think he would come. He came, but I was just hysterical because at this point the therapist had basically said to me, you know, I think he's just a complete liar, sociopath, narcissist, whatever. You need to cut contact with him. He's dangerous. You just need me here to to like cut the contact between the two of you. But in the part in the therapy, he said, I felt like a deep sense of peace with you. I feel like you did too, which resonated with me because I felt very soothed mm-hmm. when I was around him. But then I just used the therapy session to like cut contact with him. I said, I don't want to be in contact with you anymore, because I was just, this therapist was basically saying to me, yeah, he's just completely manipulating. He's just completely pulling the wool over your eyes. Nothing he's saying is real.
This is in one session?
Yeah. But weirdly in the session, because of the way we were communicating, she suddenly was like, huh, okay, actually maybe there's a real connection here, is what she said in this session. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because I was incredibly distressed. And when he told me about all this cheating, I was saying to him, like, I feel really like incredibly distressed. I'm having some like pretty mm-hmm. dark thoughts. And in the 6-hour conversation, he was like, I'm really concerned. I want to like tell your dad that you're this distressed, because I can't, if someone dies again, if someone is even remotely suicidal, like he was getting really anxious about it. And I was just saying, I would never do that to my family, but I'm really distressed. Like, this is awful. These things I'm hearing about you, like to hear that your partner has harassed young girls. Like, I'm like completely overwhelmed. And in the session, he was like kind of bursting to tell this therapist, like, she's really distressed. And I just want to make sure that she's nothing, you know? So the therapist then at the end was kind of like, you know, kind of reassure him that I was okay. And as we left the therapy session, he was like, can we please hug? And he was just like crying. And then he was like, I just keep seeing you swinging from a roof, because his mom hung herself in their family house. And we were just, crying. And he was like, I love you, I love you, I love you. And then we left. And so then I thought, okay, maybe the therapist has been wrong. But then I contacted the person he'd originally slept with in the very beginning, which was someone he'd been dating just before me. And I said to her, you know, can you give me some information about how this, you know, what was he like or what had happened? And she said, no, we didn't sleep together after we broke up. She said, but I did see him 6 months ago, and he told me that your relationship is dead and that he, you know, he's going to break up with you. And then afterwards he texted me and said, did I want to have sex? So I went to my therapist and said, he's lied about that he slept with this person in the beginning. Why would he do that? And then the therapist said, because he's a psychopath. And I said, but in the session you were saying that you thought that there was maybe a genuine connection with us. And she said, no. I sense that he was not being authentic. He's not an authentic person. You just want to be loved so much. You just want to believe it so much that you're not seeing things clearly. And then from then on, I was like stuck with these two different stories and I couldn't reconcile them. And I went on like a fact-finding mission. I called his family. His family reassured me that these characters weren't consistent with who they knew, and they were deeply shocked, but had also said that since his mum's suicide, he'd never really gotten over it. His dad was like, we are just growing further and further apart since you broke up.
The fact-finding hasn't given you the peace of mind that you are yearning for.
Yeah.
So I'm afraid that if I let you go through the whole story, we will not have much of a conversation.
Yes.
And part of it is because if he lied, then everything was a lie. Then everything I felt was a lure. Then I am a fool. If he didn't lie, then what I did feel was real. Mm-hmm. Then my experience is valid. You see, it's like very much an either or.
Mm.
There are people who are at the same time loving and lying.
Mm.
There are people who care and at the same time can't tolerate the closeness that comes from the caring.
Mm.
There is people like you who most of the time, everything you describe, you had your head on your shoulders quite well.
Mm.
It's not like you were transported in some thing that made no sense. at some point, his behavior became erratic enough or consistently avoiding enough that you went to ask people and you got a good sense. You said we need to work on it. You said we need to have some space between us. You said you need to move on. I mean, it's not like you, this notion that because you're deeply yearning for love, you lost your mind. I don't see that. Okay.
No.
But of course we are left with the question is how could I feel all of that when he was half there and half somewhere else? Because sometimes the half that people give us is plentiful. So what do you make of that statement? You didn't notice anything because you're so craving? I'm not questioning what this therapist told you. I'm questioning how you heard the statement. You so much wanted to be loved that you didn't see a thing.
Yeah, and I'm so like molded for a narcissist that I don't even notice that I'm accommodating them to such a degree.
So how are you molded for a narcissist? And I mean, what is it that you're supposed to recognize about yourself in her statement?
Yeah, so I had seen her like one or two times before, and I had let her know that my mum has been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. And that she can erupt and be quite rageful. And so I guess I learned very early on to take care of her feelings and walk on eggshells and manage the displeasure or anger. But when I was 9, my mum told me that she thought that she was diagnosed with borderline. I don't know if I was 9 or 10 or 7. And this is also like something that I witnessed a lot with my mum, which was, you know, really crossing boundaries where she would lean on me like a friend or an adult, I guess. So the therapist was sort of saying, I brought to the therapist to say, well, he didn't behave like a narcissist in the relationship. He was taking care of me a lot and I felt it was very equal. And then when I would criticize him or say something wasn't working, he was always very, okay, yep, I hear you. What can we do? How can we work on things? She said, no. I think that's just because you were very good at like pleasing him and like keeping the narcissism contained because of what you witnessed with your mom.
And what do you think about that?
I've tried so hard to try to ask these questions and piece it together. I think, yes, in some instances, I am hyper aware of people's things like a displeasure or whatever else. And I think I probably did tried a lot to please him. But also I think I'm someone who's quite vocal, and if things are not working or there's things that I don't like or I'm pissed off or whatever, I also am saying that to my partner. But I also think there was something about the way I approached these conversations with him that I think probably, yeah, did diffuse some of this, if you want to call it narcissism.
I don't call it. I don't know him, and I am a little careful about putting big labels on people. From love addict on you to narcissist on him. So I don't know enough. It could be this, and it could be a number of other things too. So I don't think it would be right on my part to deliberate about this. If you tell me I learned how to diffuse things as a kid and I continue to do so as an adult, even that, you know, many of our biggest assets also sometimes are our challenges, but that doesn't mean that they're not also assets. The ability to diffuse is in and of itself not a problem. It's the excess of it, the constant use of it, the feeling that you have to, the pressure to do it, because otherwise bad things can happen. That becomes the issue, not the trade in and of itself.
And I never felt with him that I was walking on eggshells. I never felt that fear or anxiety that he was going to be angry. And in some ways, I felt like he needed me, like with his mum, to provide stability, but he never asked me for it or made it my responsibility. That's for me what my interpretation of the relationship was, but I just can't get out of my head this idea that nothing was real.
How much rumination and obsession goes on?
A lot.
Nonstop?
Yeah. Yeah. I want to just believe my interpretation and assessment of everything, but I feel as though if I was in some mastermind manipulation, that I'm then somehow still being manipulated because I'm believing the love was real.
Mm.
And when I called his family, he wrote me to say, why are you talking to my family? And I let him know this therapist had said this and how upset I was. And he said, okay, I understand you're upset. And I don't know what else I can do to make you believe that everything was real, that I loved you, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, what would help me is if we maybe went to another therapist, maybe one that you've been seeing, who can help reassure mm-hmm. me that what you're saying is true. And he said, I promise you I will do that. I'm going back home for a month, and I promise you when I get back, I'll reach out. But please, you cannot come back and ask me more stuff because it's overwhelming me. It's taking me back to where we were. I can't sleep. I can't eat. I'm having panic attacks. I'm feeling really broken from this relationship ending. I'm not coping. I will reach out to you, but if you contact me again, I'm going to block you because I just can't cope.
Because you were reaching out to him a lot?
So after the therapist told me he was a psychopath, I wrote him an email, and he wrote back saying, I promise everything was real. I thought the way we left things in the therapy was somewhat amicable. I love you, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I don't know why I did mm-hmm. everything. I'm trying to work it out.
It's a better story to live with.
Yes.
Because this one about he is this and you are that has left mm-hmm. you with a very fractured sense of reality.
Yes.
Can I trust my feelings? Can I trust my perception of reality? Can I trust that what I think,
yes.
what I think is really is?
Yeah.
And it wasn't very useful mm-hmm. in terms of not personalizing everything.
Mm. Yes, because I didn't see his cheating right. mm-hmm. and stuff really much to do with me.
Yep. Yep.
Or our relationship.
Right. And he agrees with that too.
Yes. He says, I felt like I was self-sabotaging.
So I have a question for you. You are four yes. or 5 years with this man.
Yes.
You have a very good sense of what may or may not have transpired. Mm-hmm. You go to a therapist for one session.
Mm.
And that therapist who you know or don't know before?
I'd seen her twice before.
Okay. So a completely new therapist
mm-hmm.
gets to reinterpret your entire life and leaves you on the mat for a whole year now? I mean, how much power do you want to give my profession?
I know. Well, I think this is why I wrote to his family. This is why I wrote to him. And then eventually...
Yeah, but that was the same. That was already the power of the therapist. Now you're going to to poll the people around you to see if this whole new interpretation has validity. Is he really what this therapist told me he is? And am I really what she... It's like, you know, this is going to sound like a strange way of saying it, but sometimes... A little amount of self-deception in your type of situation, I'm not saying this as a categorical, may not be a bad idea. And I don't even know if it's self-deception, but basically here is this 5 years. Mm. I felt something snapped about 3 years into it.
Mm.
Maybe that's when I was more patient and kind and considerate of his feelings and everything, then, you know, it took a long time for me to finally put my foot down.
Mm.
Not at the end, at that moment. But part of it is because there was a lot of beautiful, good stuff between us too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And honestly, no, I don't think his lack of desire had something to do with me. And I don't mean to say that there were not things that I have, can be take responsibility for, but fundamentally, there's someone who is challenged. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of turmoil inside of him. Somehow I see a kind of a similarity between your mom coming to tell you I was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder and him talking to you about his mother's suicide. And yes, there is something about that that is very alluring to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You don't like the burden of being the confidant and the one who one tells the ultimate truth to, but on the other end, it makes you feel like there is an absolute intimacy that instantly gets established between you and the raconteur.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was something about the way that he told me, or the way that he, that whole thing, that he wasn't, I didn't feel a sense of responsibility for him, but I wanted to.
But I felt special.
Yeah, I felt special, and I want it. It's like I felt like I could do this.
Mm-hmm.
Do I've what done he this. Needed.
Yes, yeah. I've done this. I'm a pro. I've done this for 20 something years before. I get it. And maybe more than, you know, what is your deep quest for love that allows you not to see when people are truthful or not? It's more, how do you establish trust? Mm. How do you respond when people open up to you? And the thing I'm slightly apprehensive about is that it becomes a story of you did nothing wrong, or what's wrong with you? Or he did nothing wrong, or what's wrong with him? It's all or nothing. And people are sometimes more complex than that. They're not just good or bad. I mean, sometimes, yes, but many times they are doing bad things to themselves, hurtful things to themselves, hurtful things to the people they love the most. And they have no idea why. But at this very moment, it is essential for you to get out of the clutches.
How do I do that?
You pick a story that for the moment is good enough, that allows you to sleep, that allows you to meet new people, that allows you to not second guess yourself all the time.
So I feel like I did that, and I tried to reject the therapist. And then, but again, I take accountability for this. I did write him maybe 4 or 5 months after he said I'd reach out, because he hadn't, and he blocked me. And then a friend called me and said, he's engaged to someone new. And this was like 9 months after we had split up. And so I think there's a part of me, because more and more information kept coming out, there's a part of me that wants to believe the worst case, so that if more information comes, I can't be shocked or...
Okay. Okay. You don't need anybody's help for that. You know, you don't need to vilify him. You can't say, wow, that was quick. But honestly, if you had met somebody, you may have been in the same situation.
I haven't even been able to, like, date. I've because been so
I know, because he inhabits your, right? It's as if you need to answer that impossible question. Has he ever been alone much in his life?
Yeah, I was thinking that, because I was his first long-term relationship. But if I think back to, like, all the stories he's told, he's always been entangled with someone.
Right. He's never been alone. He's never been alone. I mean, the fact that he didn't have a long-term relationship, there's always been somebody. So the fact that he's 9 months into it with someone else, nothing new.
I guess for me, like, the strength of the connection, it's like baffling to me that he could just replace that.
Yes. And then. Yes. That's the thing that pierces us.
Yeah.
What do I mean if you can so quickly replace me? Am I that replaceable, dispensable, not unique, all of that. And that is the shattering of the grand ambition of romantic love. I've never loved like you. Well, really? Look how quickly you love someone else.
Yeah. Because it is that fantasy that, of course, was shattered with the cheating. But then because I had rationalized, oh, that's separate from us almost. But the love, the commitment, this desire to want to be like in a life partnership with you. Yeah, that idea that he could just do that all again so quickly is almost in a way more shocking to me than the cheating.
I agree. Because you can somehow understand he loved me deeply, but he's troubled and therefore he cheated. That somehow we can put together. But you love me deeply and now no time has passed and you're already committed to someone else. Well, then what was true about our love?
Yeah. And that's the piece with the stories is what was true about the love, because I want to take that love with me because it, I found it to be so profound and it changed me. So erasing that feels like really challenging. And also that is the type of love I want to feel in a relationship. And now I'm petrified that if I feel that again, I am now pairing love and kindness and a sense of security with potentially like manipulation, lies, what I'm feeling I can't trust. And that I find to be like quite hopeless.
I wish there was a quick potion that could help us with that. I find that is one of the most challenging maturing of a person. How do we learn to love with what has been called secondary naivete? The first time you love with first degree naivete. But then the second time when there's been a breach, a violation, a betrayal, a deception, a duplicity, then you begin to think, what's it like to love with my eyes open? So there's an alertness. There's a secondary naivete. It is grounded in alertness and reality. It is more cautious, but it allows itself to step a little bit more slowly, but it doesn't get completely blocked because one person cannot be given the power to rewrite an entire story.
Yeah, it has. I feel like he's rewritten my whole life.
Right. And you've given him a tremendous amount of power with the fear that anything that will follow could be a replica of him. That is a real fear, but it is not necessarily reality.
Will I ever be able to have that feeling where I just feel like I know, and that feeling of like deep joy and I don't know what the word is, but like a sense of like deep relaxation that like I am connecting with someone.
I'm home. I'm home.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm home. I can breathe out. I can let go. It is safe. It is real. It is true. I can trust.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I felt. And that was I met him when I was 33 and I had not felt that until then. I'd had lots of other long-term relationships, some kind of beautiful, some a bit less.
But now you know the feeling.
Yeah.
So now you know the feeling that you want to experience again.
Yeah. I'm scared of the feeling now. And I think that's what's playing in my mind.
I would be misleading you if I just tried to say, oh, no, there's no reason to. There's a very good reason to. But the only way you will get to that experience is by allowing yourself, by giving yourself the permission while being with your eyes open and loving people around you. And you're asking them, what do you see? Am I missing something? I'm trepidating. but it feels right. And the majority of people won't cheat and lie. And one person can't become the representative of an entire species. So I don't have a crystal ball. If I will ever love again, what the hell do I know? I don't know at all. But I do know what it's like to allow oneself to reopen one's eyes. Right now, your eyes have been looking inward for the whole year.
Yes.
And something very special happens when you reopen the eyes and they turn outward. Because the tenacity of the internal truth and the internal gaze has become distorting in its own way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have questioned like everything in my life.
How is what we are saying so far? How is this conversation?
Reassuring, I think. I think one of the reasons I wanted to speak to you was to get some sort of validation to not have this other psychologist's power or her in my ear so much for whatever reason.
Or me. I don't want you to have... I don't want you to give that same... Don't take it away from her and put it on me. Take a little bit back for you.
Yeah.
Take some of that power back for you. You can't have the full certainty. It will at times feel scary. It will feel ambiguous. It will come with questions.
Mm.
It's this and that.
Yes.
It's a bunch of things all together. And it's complicated. It's not this or that.
Mm. Mm.
Is he a narcissist? Am I a love addict? The world is a little bit more than that. At least how I understand the story. I may say the same thing had I seen you more, but I can't say it for you today. I can't claim or disclaim. I can just pass over some of the power and the responsibility back on you. You're giving us too much power. We are common mortals too. We sometimes think we need to know, like you're asking me to know and to give you certainty that I don't have.
Yeah.
And if I pretend to have it, then I look more powerful than I really am.
Okay.
I can sit with you in the uncertainty. Mm. And if you find a therapist, you want someone who sits with you in the complexity, in the uncertainty, in the doubt, while at the same time helping you to put one foot in front of the other.
Thank you, Esther.
You're welcome.
This was an Esther calling, a one-time intervention phone call. Recorded remotely from two points somewhere in the world. If you have a question you'd like to explore with Esther, it could be answered.
Good evening to you, ladies and gentlemen. You know how we like our therapy sessions also. We like to listen. We like to listen, especially at the beginning, you know? We like to listen because all of these questions that we might be having are all part of our day-to-day experiences. So, part of our conversation today was listening to that therapy session and listening to how the relationship started and how it went on and their intimacy and how also therapists have a tendency of making detrimental diagnoses and changes from the beginning where they have no idea how to handle it. And that's why we're talking about preferences and standards. So what is preference? Preferences. Negotiable. It is negotiable. Preferences are negotiable, right? You can say that, oh, you know, he has everything else, but he's short. So maybe I can live with it. Or she has everything else that I like, but she's tall. So maybe I can live with it. Or she would be nice to have, you know, the enhancement, enjoyment, preferring a partner who enjoys hiking, you know, somebody that is not going to, it's not life changing per se that, like, okay, there are no other qualities. There are no other qualities at all that I can look past. Maybe you enjoy hiking and the other person doesn't enjoy hiking, but 90% of everything else you guys have you guys have compatibility. So those are just preferences, like, oh, I would prefer somebody that likes to hike. I would prefer somebody that's tall. I would prefer, and we saw this on Married at First Sight in Zanzi, where, is it Portia? Yeah, Portia. Portia wanted tall, dark, and handsome, guys. She preferred tall, dark, and handsome. And then she got a young, you know, he's very fit. He plays tennis. Mara, he's just, he doesn't look like the way she wanted. And that was just aha. So preferences are negotiable and standards, right? Are non-negotiable. So standards, deal breakers, right? Non-negotiable values, essential for a healthy relationship. For example, part of the standards that we might set, that is not preference. We don't prefer people that are honest. We don't prefer people that are trustworthy. We don't prefer people that communicate well. We don't prefer that. Those are standards, because these are things to make the relationship move forward. These are things to make the relationship go further and become something a little bit more better. Eh? So these are non-negotiables, because nobody wants a person that is disrespectful. Nobody wants a person that doesn't share your core values. Like, it's with standards, for example, right? It depends on what we put in our standards and what we put in our preferences. Because you find, for example, a Christian that is dating an atheist, right? And for them, preference, right? Or a preference in standards would be that I would like somebody that I would prefer somebody that's a Christian, but the standard is self-love and compassion towards other people. So if this person is not a Christian, but has the standard of compassion towards other people and also, practices self-love, then we would say that, religion is not a standard, but it is a preference. You understand? And that is why they can still come in together. They can still come together and still make something electric, regardless of their religious background, regardless of what they believe. Now, there are certain people that make religion, for example, a standard. Like, I come from a Christian household. I can only date a Christian, and that is the first question that I'm going to ask you on our date, and you must be deep into it. You must be also going to church every single Sunday, and you must be a believer, and you must be this. Otherwise, if you are not these things, then that's a deal breaker. Then that means you don't live up to my standards, and like, it's not a preference. It's non-negotiable. It's not something that I can live past. You know, you can be the most amazing person, but if you're not a Christian, I'm like, ah, nah, I'm out. Or you can be the most amazing person, but if you don't believe in ancestors, I'm like, I'm out. It's a wrap. I'm out. Because nobody wants to be in a situation where they have to babysit somebody else's emotions towards things that are essential to you. Nobody wants to be sitting in a relationship where you are constantly bickering and fighting about something like religion, for example. And trying to convert another person. And this is something that I see a lot with Christian dudes that date Muslim women. Muslim women, or Muslims, right? Muslims have a tendency of converting you. That is their partner. And they can date you. They can have this thing of, ah, no, I'm good with your religion and I'm fine with that. But if, right, you are not a Muslim, eventually, if you want anything with me, you have to convert. And their conversion, it's not bad. It's just that it's a standard. It's not a preference. Because if it was a preference, then you would go to the mosque. If you were a woman, you would go to the mosque on Wednesday. If you were a man, you would go to the mosque on Friday. And if you were a Christian, you would just go to church on Sunday. if it was a preference where nobody cares what you're doing, as long as you are doing what makes you happy in terms of religion, we are good, right? Then that's a preference. But a standard would be, I'm not having a husband that's going to the mosque. You know, I'm not having a husband that's going to church. I'm not having a wife that's going to the mosque. I'm not having a wife that is not going to church with me. I'm not having a wife that is not converting. And that is also part of the conversations that one must have when it comes to getting married as well. Because you guys think, right, that it's just butterflies and romance and I love you forever. You're my baby, boo thing, boo. Mwah. You guys think that that is how it is, especially when it comes to marriage. But did you guys know that in certain people's religions, for example, you have to convert yourself? If you are not it, you have to convert yourself. For example, my mom was just, you know, how do I say this without not making my mom look floaty? My mom is a Kombada mom. And I've not met Kombada people deeply religious. I've not unless they are recently born again and they started going to prophets and they started going to church and what. Not unless it's that. But Kombada people are more about the gun smoke and onshinda and more about camaraderie and more about love thy neighbor and more about that. That's how it is. It's not really a whole Jesus thing. It's not really a God thing. It's not really a mosque thing. It's not really a religious thing with them. They believe in their maker and that's it. And their maker is usually God, but like, yeah, that's about it. It's not like every Sunday you guys are being woken up. Please, you guys must get ready for church. Like, at least not in our household and not in any of the households of other Kombada parents of other children have I seen it happen. So you can come through and you can come and tell me that, no, in our house it was like this, but my parents were both Kombada. That's 083-288-401. But in general, that's how it is. But then when she got married to my stepdad, she had to convert to Muslim. So because even though she was born Lutheran, it was just... I don't know, man. I don't even think she has a page or something. Like, she's just very, just do whatever you guys want to do. Like, you know? And, I think grandparents are very bad people because I don't remember my mom ever taking me to church. To be honest, I don't. I remember everybody else taking me to church while she was tipping and sleeping on her Sunday, you know? But I don't remember my mom taking me to church, but with my children, my mom gets up in the morning and gets dressed and they go to church. Wild. Wild. I'm like, whoa. Okay. So now we understand the concept of preference and standards. So, for example, something else that would be a standard. And something else that would be a preference, for example, right, would be family. So a family would be if you're family oriented or not. So there are certain people that want to date people or want to be in relationships with people that come from healthy households, that come from a two-parent household, that comes from what they assume to be perfect household. And for them, that is non-negotiable. So part of the first questions that they ask you on the first date is, oh, are your parents married? And, or are your parents alive? Or tell me about your family. And you go and say things like, oh, yeah, but we were raised by a single dad because, my mom passed away. And that is still, you know, it's still okay. We're trading on good ground here. And then it goes deeper into like, oh, so your parents were married? When did your mom pass away? It's like, oh no, my parents were never married. My mom just passed away, but they were living their separate lives and that's it. Then you see the face change. Oh, so Were they ever married? Then these are questions that pop up, you know, and that is for a person, right, that has a particular standard, that they will not date somebody that is not from a two-parent household, that is not from the same dynamics, that does not understand what it is like to grow up with a mother and a father in one household. If your mother had died and your parents were married, then it would still be okay because your parents were married. Your dad is just widowed. You understand? A widower. You understand? But now, they've never, it's like a deal breaker for them. Whereas, somebody doesn't care. Doesn't care if you come from a two-parent household, and doesn't care if you come from a one-parent household, doesn't care if you come from a grandparent household, right? Doesn't care if you come from a foster home. Because they are interested in you. That's where you can see now, for one person, this is a standard, you know? This is a standard. No. For me, this is a standard. It's a deal breaker if this person doesn't come from this. It's a standard that I have placed for myself. And then for somebody else, that is a preference. That is a thing of, no, I would prefer dating a woman that comes from a two-parent household, but I really don't care as long as she's got good manners, as long as she's got a good heart, as long as she's got respect, as long as she what. And then we say, like, good manners would be the standards, you know. Good manners, good heart, good what. Those are the standards, right? And then preferences would be like, yeah, I would prefer, you know, I would prefer her to come from a two-parent household, because then she would know the dynamics of having a mother and a father in the household. She would also know how to treat a man. But if she doesn't have that, but she still has the same the qualities and the standards that I prefer, then I'm down and I'm game with that. You see, that's the thing. And so many of us are mixing preferences and standards. We are putting them into one box and then we're just jamming them all up. And then we are not making a thin line between things. And that is why later on we become disappointed with the people that we have entangled ourselves with. Because of this particular barrier that we had not dissected in the beginning of the relationship, whether this is going to be a standard or this is just a preference. So now you find somebody that is extremely untidy. And when we say extremely untidy, I mean extremely untidy. The type of untidy that leaves dishes in the sink for like 2 weeks. The type of person that keeps piling them up. The type of person that lives in a cockroach-infested household and they live alone. Like the type of person that doesn't make their bed. The type of person that just smells the t-shirt and it's like, it's clean. Put it on. And then they've been wearing that t-shirt for like a month. Yeah, that type of messy. You might say that, oh, for me, messiness is not a real problem. So I would prefer somebody that's clean, but I don't mind it. Then you get into a situation with a person like that. Somebody that's extremely untidy and dirty. So now we have to ask you, is it a standard or is it a preference? Because from the beginning, you said it's a preference. You don't really care. Now you got this and you are unhappy with the untidiness. You are unhappy with the mold. You're unhappy with the fungus inside the sink. You're unhappy that things are not organized according to the way you want them to be organized, right? You are unhappy about this. You're unhappy about the person being a dirty person, right? But in the beginning, you said this is a preference. It's not a standard. Now, all of a sudden, 6 months in, you decide that, oh no, actually cleanliness is a standard. And the person's like, no, but you know I live like this. And that's why people come up with sayings like, yeah, you can't change me. You can't want to come into my life and change me. Because who are you? Who do you think you are to want to come and change me in my life? You know? Because you made it seem like it's a preference. Especially the worst part was you walking into their household. They look like they tidied up, but they can only look like they tidied up for a short while. Later on, you start to see their true nature, especially when you start sleeping over, especially when you start spending more time there, you start seeing it. Many of us put on our best clothes and our best faces for the people that we love because this is effort.
You understand? This is the effort that we put into our relationships with other people, be it friends, be it colleagues, be it lovers, be it parents. We put on our best Sunday clothes to attend our friend's funeral. We put on our best Sunday clothes, right? To attend our friend's wedding. We put on our best. You understand? Because these are people that are important to us, and this is us displaying this. Now, this is not any different when it comes to relationships, because we also have a tendency of being on our best behavior when it comes, right, to relationships, when it comes to our environment, when it comes to, it's not like we don't know that we are very messy people. Sometimes we just don't know what is gross and what is not gross. For example, for me as a black woman, right, part of the culture shocks that I had was when we went on tour in grade 7. So we come from the years where we used to go on tour to South Africa to go and play with a number of other schools. And we were sports. We were athletes. So we used to go and play like hockey and netball and rugby and soccer. Soccer was not really a thing, but it became a thing later. That's how we mixed up the colors. But all in all, we used to go. Now, part of the culture shock that I had as a black woman that is raised by a black woman, that comes from a black woman, that comes from a black woman household, that's black woman, black woman, black woman, is that we don't take off our underwear and throw it in the washing machine. We don't allow other people to wash our underwear. As black women, and to be specific, as Ndonga women, it's just not a thing. We wash our own underwear. Right. And even if we come to a point where we are wealthy and we are, you know, nice, we just don't give nobody our underwear. Not unless we know them for such a long time and we know that they are washing the underwear with washing machine and it's not their hands touching our hoo-ha business. You understand? It's just not a thing. It's not a thing. It's not a thing. Then I was in the midst of Caucasian girls and I'm now a black Ndonga hun. Right? That comes from a black community. And we know that when you step into the shower, right? You step in with your underwear, not the bra, just the panties. Then you wash your panties and then you take your bath, or you take your bath and then you wash your panties. But for your panties to be washed, they must be washed. And if you are dirty, right? For example, if you are a dirty black girl, then you would most probably wrap up your underwears and blame it on being uncomfortable hanging your underwear in the midst of other people. And then you just have a gang. That's why black women have a lot of panties. Like they have a lot of underwear. Like a lot. Because they have a panty bag. They have a panty bag. Now, this panty bag is filled with underwear. Like a black woman usually has like maybe 50 or 100 panties, right? And it is for moments of this. We have period panties. We have sexy panties. We have panties for the house. We have comfortable panties. We have all kinds of panties. I'm feeling hot panties. We have the pity party panties. We've got all kinds of panties, guys. It's panty season there by the black women, right? So I don't know about others, but I guess white women also have a gang of panties. That's why I say that Afrikaans people and Vambo people, very much alike, but there are just some differences. But anywho. So for a dirty black girl, what would be appropriate would be for you to not wash your underwear before you shower, after you shower, and just roll it up in a ball and then put it in a plastic, or put it somewhere else that's not going to make the other panties inside the panty bag smell. And then you're just going to be taking out of the panty bag for your whole entire trip and piling up all your dirty underwear, so that when you get home, part of your laundry or part of the things that you are doing is washing your underwear. Right? Usually by hand, but also you can, like, with the age of technology, now we just throw them into the washing machine. Especially since we have a gang of underwear, we just throw it into the washing machine and it is what it is. And that's for the lazy hands, right? Because the hardworking hands, they wash, chaka, 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 you know, put a little bit. Oh, and a life hack for the ladies out there. You wash your underwear and then you simpura it, right? In lemon water. So you can just get that little lemon juice in the shop in the green bottle and you can put some lemon juice inside the water. Then you simpura it. It takes out the odors. It takes out the fungus. It takes out whatever you think is not belonging on your panties. Then you put it in the sun because it will also kill mildew, right? That's how you have clean, really clean panties. That's why you don't have all that acid and all that water, because sometimes it's the yeast infections that is burning your panties. Anyhow. So we would put them in the bags and then go and wash it after the trip. But one thing that I did not see at all was a white woman washing her panties, or a white girl washing her panties. Never. I've never seen it. It is something that I haven't seen up until today, and I've been alive for 34 years. I've never seen a white woman going into the shower washing her panties, or going out of the shower washing her panties with her hands. Usually their underwear is thrown into a laundry basket. And you can come and tell me that, no, that's not true, matriarch. You can. But from what I've seen, they throw their stuff into the laundry basket for whoever is doing the washing to wash. And for me, that was like, oh! Like, what? And then you even find the menstruation ones. You're like, oh, what? Like, oh, we don't do that. No. Like, even our pads, right, is you take the pad off and then you wrap it around in toilet paper, in what, and then you wrap it in what, and then you wrap it, and then you throw it far away. Inside the dustbin. And sometimes you don't just put it on top of the dustbin. You make sure that a plastic is on top of it to hide it or something. Or you put it into that little dustbin that is made for pads. You know? Like, because how? Ha. And that's why you find a lot of clogged situations because also they throw. Like, I think that it's a lot of us because we were told, or we were taught, that our period blood is not something that should be seen by others. So I think many of us black girls flush pads, we flush panty liners, we flush tampons. And out of those three, it's only one that is not supposed to be flushed. And that is really, honestly, the pad. The pad is too big for you guys to be flushing it. Please don't flush pads. Just roll it in a toilet paper, roll it in a plastic, and throw it into the dustbin. Or you can flip the dustbin over, then you put it inside so that it's like a sandwich. But don't flush it. You understand? So those are things. So going back to the messiness, right? You tell yourself that, oh, no, I don't really mind a messy guy because I'm going to clean. And then you forget that you are actually an extremely neat person. And eventually one day you're going to get tired of cleaning up after somebody constantly, all the time, every single time. They don't wash dishes. They don't wash pots. They don't sweep. They don't, they take off their clothes and then they jutter the trouser onto the ground, and that's who they are. And eventually you start becoming mad about it. And that is why I'm saying, let's look at preferences. Let's look at standards. Let's look at things from a realistic perspective. If we are looking at people that we are about to enter relationships with in their true essence of, I might marry this person. If we are looking at one another in that way, you must ask yourself, can you live with their qualities? Can you live with their standards, their preferences, their qualities? Can you live with them as a human being? Because when you guys are dating and everybody's living at their house, right? You guys don't have to deal with the mess, and you come and clean up the mess after a week. So the whole week you are in your clean environment and you're not with them. You're just talking on the phone, and you go for the weekend and it's dirty and you just clean it up, and the person looks like they appreciate that. But what happens when this is forever? What happens when you look at the fact that you stay in your clean environment, that you don't have to clean all the time? All you have to do is do touch-ups, like sweep and mop, and now and then you dust, right? And that's it. Then you do a deep cleaning after 2 weeks, do a deep cleaning after 2 weeks and wash your beddings after a week. You understand? That's how you are. And then you get to the point where you are now going to be with this person forever. This person that's eating in bed, for example, eating in bed, leaving plates under the bed. Like, I don't know what it is with teenage boys. I don't know what it is with boys, but leaving dishes under the beds, ne? Like you eat and then you finish eating and then you throw, then you slide the plate under the bed. Like, what is wrong with you people? Like how? No, man. And then now you have to live with this. So you have to ask yourself, honestly, can I live with this for the rest of my life? Can this be my life for the rest of my life? Can I live with a messy person to this extent for the rest of my life? Those are the questions that now determine whether or not, right, this is a preference or it's a standard. Because if your standard is, I cannot deal with a messy person, right? Then you will know exactly what it is. When you identify a messy person, you're like, whoa, I'm sorry, I can't. I can't because it is who you are. It's not what you're doing. It's who you are. So you are always going to be like this. There are little traits about you that you can't change because most probably you grew up in a house where cleaning was not a thing and it's not a priority. Neatness is not a priority. And you are not supposed to, like, sorry. You don't iron your things. Sorry. Yeah, you're not neat. Sorry. Then you can look for somebody that is more your type. And sometimes you ask yourself, like, maybe I can live with it, but can you really? You must ask yourself real questions when it comes to partners, because many of us don't ask ourselves these questions. We are so in love and so lovey-dovey, and then we think that neatness or cleanliness, right, is a preference, not a standard. Then we get in love with a person that is so dirty, right, that their house smells like fungus. Eh? Their house smells like fungus. When you step in every day, you're opening windows and opening what? Can you live with that? Can you be in a household that's going to be like that? Because that is going to be your partner. And also vice versa. If you are not a dirty person, but you are messy, right? And you have your days where you want everything in place and you have days where you just don't care for it and it's fine, right? But you're just messy. Everything is clean, but you're messy. Can you live with somebody that wants everything arranged? A neat person. Can you actually live with that? Because it's nice when it's happening at their house, right? Then you come there and then it's a clean environment. And you're like, woo, baby. Baby done cleaned up for me. Baby done did what for me? Baby done did this for me. Baby done did that for me. And it's nice. But what happens when this person with these qualities is now the person that you're going to spend the rest of your life with? Can you live with it? Is it a preference or is it a standard? Huh? Because, I would prefer somebody that's neat. Is it a necessity? Is it a standard? Not really. But in all honesty, for me, part of my standards is clean. Like, I can't deal with dirty. I can't deal with dirty. One of the things that I can't deal with as a person is smells. I am very sensitive to smells. Not unless you're going through something, that's the reason that you are smelling. But, no. You can't be smelling funny. Like, what's that smell? You know, take off your trousers, the whole room smells of something. How? No. You know? Like, for me, that's a thing. For me, that's a standard. Like, you on your body, right? You have to be clean. Yeah. For me, that's a thing. And also clean clothes. Yeah. They don't have to be the best of the best. It's just clean clothes. Yeah. That for me is like, yeah, I like that. I like that. But then also, with the partner that I have, I've also started liking certain other things, like your things must be ironed. Like, I'm not really an ironing person. But I don't like wrinkles either. I'm not really an ironing person, but that's why I shop, how I shop, where I shop. I buy things that I never have to iron in my life. The last time I needed, like, I don't iron. I don't iron because I only maybe have like two iron things. There's a reason that I haven't worn my pink dress and my blue dress, because all of them require ironing. So I'm just going inside my cupboard and I'm just working my way around these two dresses. Even if I want to wear them, I'm working my way around these two dresses. Do you know why? Because I don't like ironing. I don't like ironing and I will not iron. And it is what it is. So, like, I hate ironing so much that as a child, I figured out mechanisms on how to iron without actually ironing. For starters, you take off your uniform when it's a little bit damp, and then you put it in between the mattress and the base of the bed, and you sleep on it. Tomorrow when you wake up, one, it's fully dry. Two, it's straight. Done. You see? Now you can call me lazy all you want. It's fine. You can call me lazy all you want. It's cool. But I really don't like ironing. And then my personal person loves ironing. He irons everything. He irons a handkerchief. He irons everything. He irons socks. He irons trousers. He irons, 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 irons. He likes it. He likes ironing. He likes washing. He likes clean things. And I'm like, okay, cool. You look nice. It's fine. I will look for my dress that doesn't require ironing. I will. And also, he's a person that's very helpful. So sometimes he can surprise me with an iron dress. Sometimes he can be like, oh, I saw you looking at the clothes and I know that you don't like ironing. So I ironed it for you while you were in the shower. It's like, what? Because I've been wanting to wear it for 2 months. And I just work my way around it. So even when I go into a shop, I'm not buying no shirt. I'm not buying things that I have to iron. I'm looking for material that I can just throw on and go. Because hey, we're not about that. We're not about that life of ironing. That kangura. No. No. And for me, that is a preference. It's not like... Like, if he doesn't iron clothes, I hate him. No. I can live without it. I can live without it. Because we can put it between the mattress and the base. It's all good. Or, because I'm a person that doesn't like to iron, right? I figured out ways on hanging my clothes when I wash them in such a way that they never need ironing. That's how bad it is. In such a way that they don't need ironing. I think that the last time I ironed my children's school uniform was maybe like 2 years ago. I don't like it. It's not my thing. I try and avoid it by all means. If I'm ever doing it, it's because there's nobody else to do it or I don't have a choice but to do it. But it is not my heart. It is not my will. It is not things I like to do, like I like ironing. I don't like it. It's not my thing. It's not my favorite. I don't like that. It's not my favorite. You understand? So that's where you can identify which one is a preference and which one is a standard. A preference is something that is negotiable. You know, we can negotiate. We can say like, you know what? Okay. Since you really don't like cooking and I really don't like washing dishes, how about I do all the cooking forever and you do all the washes forever? You know, so that's things where we can negotiate. We can negotiate on it. But how about with standards? It's a matter of I will never cook and I will never wash dishes ever. I will not do it. And I want a person that understands that. And I want a person that likes washing dishes so that I always cook and they always wash dishes. Like those are more like standards. Those are commands. Those are things that we cannot change. This one is the deal breaker. The relationship is not going anywhere if we didn't check these two things. You understand? What? Don't like cooking? I can't. Even my mother would not appreciate a woman that cannot wash dishes. Deal breaker. Oh! And part of the deal breakers, right, is sexuality. So it seems like it's all fun and games, right? One thing that I've noticed about men is that straight guys have this fantasy of girl on girl action, right? They have this fantasy, this deep fantasy of girl-on-girl action, but they don't actually think about it in the long run. They think about it as a fading thing or a fling thing. But if somebody tells you that they are bisexual, bisexual means that they can fall in love with somebody of the same gender and the opposite gender. They are capable of falling in love. Now, you guys always associate everything to sex. You guys associate everything to coitus. And now you think that this is just a fleeting thing. And this is just, it's so attractive. Like, wow, it's great. But that's not actually the case, because then you let your guard down. Because you've only been straight with straight women. You let your guard down every single time there is a woman in the vicinity, and then your girl is leaving you for another girl and you don't understand it. But you didn't look at your preferences and your standards, because you looked at your preferences. Look like, oh, I like it. Girl on girl action. You thought that you were going to sit in a room and these two girls were just going to do things to themselves and each other, and you're going to watch, and you're most probably going to be part of it, and you're going to be in the middle of two attractive hands, and that's how you pictured it. But you didn't actually picture it as somebody, as something that should be part of your standards. You made it seem like it's fine. It's a preference. It's negotiable, right? Up until it's not. That's why I strongly advise you guys to have real conversations with one another, especially if you are considering. Look, when you start the relationship, just if you have no idea what you're doing, here's a tip from the beginning of the year. Here's a piece of advice. Just look at everybody that you're dating as somebody that you're going to spend the rest of your life with. If you start looking at people like that, you will know who is not husband material and who's not wife material, and you don't want this. Because then you are more likely to cut it before it goes very far. Many of us are spending years and years and years with people we can't envision marrying. You can't envision marrying this person because, one, the person is 30. Two, you guys have to live together for the rest of your lives. And you don't think that you can live with a person that has fungus, like athlete's foot. It's just gross. Like, you can't, you like, woo, athlete's foot. Like, we can look for something at the pharmacy. It's not a deal breaker. And what if nothing works, sis? Can you live with it? He's got a great personality. Okay. But also athlete's foot. So, is it a standard or a preference? We have to talk about it. And I'm here. I'm here to talk about it with you. We have to look at these things, and we have to weigh our real options. Look at people, like, even when you started dating, just look at this person like, I'm going to spend the rest of my life with this person. Now, I'm not telling you that, oh my goodness, you must start envisioning castles in the sky for yourself and wedding dresses and stuff like that. But look at it from the perspective of, if this man were to be my husband, if this woman were to be my wife, would I be able to live in the household with this person? Would I be able to fight with this person? Would I be able to be feeling safe with this person? And that answer and that feeling is exactly the same feel, is exactly the feeling that I want you guys to have to make your decision on whether or not you're going to stay with this person, or you're not going to stay with this person, or how long you intend to stay, or how long you don't intend to stay, or just clear things up, put them in the air. Because many of you guys, right, are dating traditional dudes. Traditional dudes with a modern flair. So this guy wants to be a traditional dude. He wants to be the, you must bend down and you must bring him food. You know, he wants to be like that. He wants to be, tambi kujampano and what. But he's the same type of person that also doesn't want to live by the principles of culture. Like, married men don't come into the house at night, or married men wear hats, or married men do this, or married men do that. He doesn't want to live by the responsibilities of a traditional married man, but he wants you as a wife to live by the traditions of a married woman. Right? And this is where it comes in. So the question would be, before you guys, when you guys start dating, you look at these things. Now, everything looks amazing when you guys are dating because everybody makes time. Do you remember when I told you that everybody makes time and everybody makes effort for people that they love? So if you are going over to my house on Friday, I'm going to clean. Like, I don't even want you to see that I'm not clean. No. If you show up by surprise, you're going to find exactly what you're going to find there. A surprise. You're going to find a surprise. Yes. Mara, all in all, right? I will try for you. So I will buy the best lingerie. I'll buy good panties. I'll smell amazing. I'll do my hair. I'll do my nails. And I'll scrub my feet. And I'll have smooth skin for you. I will go to the spa for you. You understand? And then when you live with me, you realize that I don't really even go to the spa that much. I don't even really do any of that because now you are here. We are here now, you know? And that's why people say things like, yeah, you changed. Ever since we got married, you changed. But the truth is that it was a facade that we all put up. Because even in as much as I've changed and in as much as I'm not as romantic and I'm not as clean and I'm not as what as I used to be when you were a boyfriend, right? Even you are not the same. Because when we were apart, part of the conversations were always around the fact that I'll call you back. I'll call you back. I'm quickly busy in a meeting. Or I'll call you back. I'm quickly doing this. I'll call you back. You seemed busy. But when we're together, you're playing PlayStation. You're playing FIFA. Every single FIFA that's coming out, you have downloaded it. You have the highest score, of FIFA. So I'm looking at you like, so you used to put me on hold so you can play your FIFA games. Because these are not meetings. These are not tenderpreneur things. These are just things that you're doing. Right. So we all do it. We all put on our best clothes. We put on our best Sunday clothes to meet the people that we love, to make a good impression on other people. And that is where we really need to set our standards and set our preferences correctly. We have to understand that preferences are negotiable. We can negotiate. Okay, so, all right, I am not big on sleeping with the lights on, and then you only sleep with the lights on. So how about we get a little light that stays your side? That's how we find a common ground, because unfortunately, we are not identical. We are not the same. We might have core values that are the same, but we are not one person. There are certain things that you like. You like eggs. I don't. You like cornflakes. I like wheat bix. You like breakfast foods. I hate breakfast. We're not the same. So this is the part where we come in the middle and we sit and we talk about it. And I think that this is important, especially in the beginning of the relationship. But in the beginning of the relationship, it's a bit off because you are so smitten and you are so in it and you are so invested and you really, really, really want to make it work. And also in that really wanting it to make it work, it's not desperation, but you can also walk away very quickly. So that is why everybody's on their best behavior in the beginning, because at least if you love me already and we've been together for a year, then you're willing to stay and hear me out. You're willing to stay and hear me out on, and maybe compromise some of your values or negotiate some of your values and your standards and your preferences. Maybe, just maybe, right? And that's why we all pretend to somewhat, be amazing. You know? Not unless you guys are depressed. Whereas depressed people talk a lot of truth. Yeah, they talk a lot of truth. They're like, I just feel bad because my life is not going the way I want it to go. So that's not something that somebody that is trying to win you. is going to say. Usually they make it seem like their lives are amazing and they are really go-getters and the truth is that when they hit a block wall, it's not to say that they are not those ambitious people. It's not to say that they were trying to catch you and manipulate you into being with them. It's just that they've hit a rock bottom or they've hit a wall. And now they just have to navigate around it. And that's why we're talking about standards and preferences. That's why we're talking about it. Because, yeah. For example, if you're big on honesty, and that's a standard, right? If you're big on honesty, then honesty is not negotiable. There are certain people that can't tolerate dishonesty at all. And part of it is the lies, you know, the lies they just pile up. For example, people that have the standard of honesty, usually they have experienced dishonesty in the past from either caregivers, parents, or from a previous relationship. And it had spiraled so out of control that they have vowed and had promised themselves that I only want honesty. So these people are constantly on alert. You have to absolutely be transparent and truthful from the beginning through everything, no matter how bad, no matter how they take it, no matter what, right? You have to be truthful. Otherwise, it's a deal breaker. Like, oh, you lied to me about the shopping bag or you lied to me about the Vaseline. I can't do this anymore. It's part of my standards. I'm breaking up with you. And this person would really honestly just break up with you. And you crying and thinking like, yeah, but it was something so small. You know, it's the plastic bag. I mean, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal to you because honesty is a preference for you. It's not a big deal because honesty is a preference. You don't mind lies. But then for them where lies are a deal breaker, then it is a big deal. It's just like respect, right? Respect is negotiable to some and non-negotiable to others. Where you can say that, oh, that's disrespectful. And because you disrespected me once, I'm not going to stay and wait for you to disrespect me again. I'm done. And there's somebody else that can be disrespected a number of times. They can be pulled by the hair. I feel like the most disrespectful thing in the world, part of the most disrespectful things in the world is to be beaten in public. Beating in itself is bad, but to be dragged, like imagine you are being dragged through the streets of Kayutura by your boyfriend that's beating you in front of people. Like, how do you come out of the house? Like, tomorrow. Like shame. Ooh, shame. 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 And infidelity. Shame. 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 Infidelity can make anybody stay in the house forever. Because you are thinking everybody's looking at you like you are the stupid one. But with a fool. Like, you are stupid. Oh! Yeah. So there's certain, like, That would be where we say preference and standards, right? Somebody's standards is non-negotiable, like infidelity, even a whiff of it, I can't and I will not and I will not tolerate it. And then you find somebody that can actually live with it, that can understand, that can understand that, yeah, they just have an unfaithful girlfriend or they have an unfaithful boyfriend or they have an unfaithful, it is what it is. They don't want that and they're going to try and change them, but it's not really what it is. And then you find other people that will walk. Diana. No. No. You have to bring the whole village, the army, everybody to come and talk to me. You know, because of this, no, guys. Yeah. Then you find the narcissist also that lie and make it seem like, oh, you didn't see nothing. Like, you have to show me that you saw something otherwise. And then when you show them, what then? Like, because they deny the whole time and then you show them. Then what happens then? Like, okay, so you said that you're not cheating on me. And then I hired a private investigator and this is what the private investigator found. And these are pictures of you cheating on me. Now they don't want to focus on the pictures of you cheating. They want to focus on the fact that, oh, so you don't trust me enough. That's why you hired a private investigator. We're like, but let's just talk about it because you say it's not happening. Here it is. It's happening. So what's up? Yeah. So those are standards and preferences. Each and every one of us have them. I would just like for us to actually look at our preferences and our standards at the beginning of the year so that we know what exactly that we're getting ourselves into or what we are already into. Because even if you are already hitched, even if you're already with someone, right, it is also something good to look at. It's something good to look at in a sense of, what did I settle for? What did I settle for? What was non-negotiable and it is now negotiable? What was negotiable and it's now non-negotiable? What have I learned and how did I outgrow and what did I grow into? And this is just a self-reflective kind of way. And see within your own life what things you can't tolerate anymore. For example, back chatting, right? Back chatting in itself is something that's for me, that's like a standard. Like, let's not do back chatting, especially for employees. If we're doing back chatting, then you can just go to a place where you guys can back chat with your boss. I don't mind respectful conversations. I don't mind sitting around the table and airing our grievances. What I do mind is you standing over there and saying, but ma'am, then you must just go and but ma'am somewhere else. It's all good. It's cool. Right? So we are laying the foundation. We're laying the foundation. We're trying to see exactly how we're going to go about it and what we're going to do for 2026. And this 2026 is most now, I'm still trying to find a theme for it because, our 2025 theme was trust the process and our 2024 theme was go with the flow. And so I'm trying to see with 2026 what exactly we should be doing. And I'm struggling. So maybe if you have an idea for what we should be doing for 2026, maybe you can beep us up and maybe you can highlight us, let us know on our Eagle FM page. You can just say for Pulling Heartstrings theme, I think it should be this or I think it should be that. Maybe you can just put it out there and, I will definitely respond to it and I'll see if it is something that is befitting. But I think it was a good conversation nonetheless. And also I think that it was a conversation that was beautiful to me. So ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow we're going to finish off with why they matter and how to handle the differences and also communication amongst a family and so forth. But from me, the matriarch, I am honestly bidding you guys farewell. I love you guys forever and a day. Y'all are important to me. And I will see you again tomorrow. Same time, same place. From me, the matriarch, I bid you farewell. I say au revoir. Ciao, ciao. Bye bye.